This is the level of sign.
You got your trees all cleaned up?
Just about. Everything's out there. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to our meeting today, the City Council meeting, March 10th. We appreciate everyone being here. We've got a full agenda. And if you want to speak on a certain agenda item, you certainly may do that. Just raise your hand at the proper time and we'll call on you. And we would appreciate any comments you have. And we're going to start with council prayer, and then I pledge allegiance to our flag.
Our Heavenly Father, source of wisdom and grace, be with us tonight as we do the people's business. We ask your blessings upon us. We express our gratitude to you for helping us making Aiken the city that it is. In this time of recovery from Operation PAX, or Winter Storm PAX, we see what a wonderful city we have, with neighbors helping neighbors and strangers helping strangers. We ask your special blessings and gifts on those in our city staff who are dealing with extraordinary challenges. Keep them safe as they face very, very difficult workplace safety issues. And we ask special blessings on William Price, who's recovering from a major health issue. Be with him and his family and with us all as we look forward to his recovery. We ask these things in your name as we pray. Amen.
Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Our first item of business this evening is the minutes, consideration of the minutes from the regular meeting of February 24th, 2014. Do we have a motion and a second for approval?
I so move.
Second.
Second. Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Under presentations, there are two. The first one is a recognition of Public Safety Officer Aaron Huckins, South Carolina Fire Academy, Robert Frick Award recipient. Mr. Pierce, please.
Thank you, Mayor. Chief Barranco is here, and I'm sure he'd come to the microphone and introduce Brian Brazier, who is with us today, Captain Brazier, and then Aaron Huckins and his family. Chief?
Thank you, sir. Aaron, will you bring you and your son on up? This is taxing. It's with great privilege that I stand before you tonight to tell you that we have another Chief Robert Frick Award winner from the South Carolina Fire Academy. Aaron Huckins went with three other public safety officers to the South Carolina Fire Academy Recruit School, and Aaron distinguished himself academically and was awarded the Chief Robert Frick Award for the highest GPA during the or grade point average during the 8-week course. So, congratulations, Aaron.
Absolutely.
Aaron, good job. Thanks. I didn't know your son's name.
Paxton.
Good to see you. Good to see you. Congratulations.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Congratulations.
Thank you, sir.
Congratulations.
Thank you for doing it.
Pretty cool from the shirt. That's
good.
Yeah.
No, don't. Item two under presentations is employee workplace engagement surveys. Pierce, please.
Mayor, thank you very much. As council has seen from the memo that I included with your agenda packet, Judy Chun is with us here tonight. She's the owner of People Solutions. Her business partner, James Sparks, has joined her as well. After our discussions and meetings about employee morale and an employee survey, a very clear message that I took away from our last meeting is that council would like to see a different approach as to how we conduct these employee engagement surveys. And I've had the opportunity to meet with Judy Chun, and she's here tonight to talk about an approach that she's used several times in working in collaboration with Profiles International. I've included her resume as well as some of the sample customers for that, and I think, Judy, you may have some materials for council as well. If you could give that to the clerk and then come over and let us know how you can help us with employee engagement.
Mayor Kavanaugh, Mr. Pierce, and ladies and gentlemen, thank you for allowing me to be here tonight to tell you about best practices in collecting employee information, employee engagement, and employee satisfaction information to help everybody make better decisions. As Mr. Pierce said, I am a MBA, as you'll see, I'm an MBA JD, a former C-suite individual. I moved to Aiken from Hawaii. My dad was stationed in the Navy there, and when you're a certain age, you just stay and you continue your education and your career experience. So I was lucky enough to work for some of the largest companies in Hawaii, and my last job was as CEO of a $185 million company that administered health insurance benefits to the second largest insurer in the state. I'm also a strategic business partner with Profiles International, and Profiles International is in over 120 countries, over 30 languages, over 40,000 customers, millions of users, and to be a strategic business partner with Profiles International, you actually have to pass an assessment. You have to score 85% or higher. It's a combination of an SAT-type test along with behavioral traits and interests. And you also have to either be a business owner, an executive, or a former C-suite individual. So they have very tight parameters for who they accept as a strategic business partner. As Mr. Pierce said, I'm also the leader of People Solutions, which is my own company, and a partner with James Sparks, who's a CPA in Sparks & Chun Consulting Group. So again, thank you for having me this evening to tell you about our best practices. In your packet, you'll see some shots of our Profiles International website that I produced for you. And I wanted to call to your attention some of the differentiators between what we do and what others do. And I think this is going to be important to you leading the city council in terms of its decision-making on how to engage your employees. First is, you'll see the SOC3 in the middle of that first page from our website. And that's a key differentiator because that means that our process and our site and our methodology is the most secure that you can have. And there are no other companies in the country that have that designation. So that, to me, is one of the reasons that I joined Profile, because it's a key differentiator. It's a tough achievement to get. You're constantly audited, and it's an important confidentiality designation. You can also see that Profiles International is not just employee assessment, employee satisfaction survey company. It also does everything from helping companies hire the right people in the right position all the way up to succession planning. So we are a multifaceted approach. And in my background, you'll see from the bio, I have a very strong human resource background. And that is a perfect match with what I'm doing today. The other differentiator between ourselves and many of the other companies out there, which is important to me and I think it'll be important to you, is that we have a staff of PhDs that guide us through our validation process. We validate based on content, construct, criterion, the three C's as we call it, and reliability. So we meet or exceed the U.S. Department of Labor minimum standards on all of those. And feel free to ask me any questions anytime. We also have a department of psychologists and psychometricians, I hope I'm saying that correctly, that do our research and our ongoing validation. We're the only company, again, in the country that continuously validates our material, and that's very important. Let me give you an example. When I say content validity, what that means is that everybody, no matter their age or gender, ethnic background, can all understand the question the same way. For example, an example of not being validated for content is if I was to have lunch with you and I would say, boy, that dish is really hot. Now, what would you think I meant by that?
Good. Hot.
Hot. Can mean temperature hot, that word. It can mean spicy hot. In some areas, it can also mean, wow, that dish looks really good. I can't wait to eat it. Looks really hot. But we would not use a word like that in any of our surveys. We would use the word that we intended, which is spicy. So that's why content validation, it's a very simple example, but it helps get the point across, is very important. You don't want any of the questions to be misunderstood or taken out of context. And in your packet that was already provided to you, you see some of our clients. This is just a representation of our clients. We serve anywhere from the small mom-and-pop operations to the Fortune 500 companies. So we have a lot of experience and, again, a lot of depth in the people that conduct this business. But let's get on to the actual workplace engagement survey. I've included some additional information in the handout that we just passed out to you, which I think will help you understand our process a little bit better. When you think of workplace engagement survey, I'm not sure the first thing that comes to your mind, but it's an important combination of how well the employees are engaged in their positions. Because when you're engaged in what you're doing, you're more productive, you're happier, you're a better team member. It comes across in all different ways. We also determine employee satisfaction with their management, and that's important too, because that's, you know, at the council level and at the mayoral level and with Mr. Pierce, it's very hard sometimes to have your finger on the pulse, isn't it? You have to go through layers and layers and layers to really understand what's going on with the people that work for the city. So it's really important to do these surveys, and that's, I'm sure, why you requested one and why it's important to use a validated scientific approach so you're getting objective findings. But we also measure their satisfaction not only with management but with their job in general. So you're going to get three components, and I'll show you that in just a moment. The next couple of documents are our quick reference guide, which gives you the 9 components of the report that you'll be seeing in a moment. And then our technical manual, which I alluded to a little bit earlier about the science behind the survey. go over all of that right now in the interest of time. But I do want to point you to a sample, an example only. It should be the last document in the packet we just handed out to you. It's a sample of the actual report. Now, on the second page, it shows you the, in the introduction section, it gives you the definition of what we're trying to achieve, of what we're measuring. So we're going to measure engagement. And this will be by each of your departments, so you have that information. And I think that's important to you all. And we're also going to compare it to the national average. Now, what we suggested that this survey be voluntary, not mandatory, so that you get those individuals that really want to tell you something to participate. You can also make it mandatory, but that would be a decision. If you go to page...
Ms. Chun.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking about what you just said, and maybe I need to give it more thought, but my first reaction to it is sometimes if you make that survey voluntary, you might only hear from the folks who have an axe to grind.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't know if there's an advantage or disadvantage to mandatory, but it seems like if you make it optional, the only people you're going to hear from are those who might have something to complain about.
I agree with Mr. Mary. From working at a health services clinic, when we do our employee satisfaction surveys, and of course it's anonymous, nobody's name is on it, but it's very, very difficult to get them to fill it out in the first place. But if you just, you know, gave them the option, you'd get very little back. So, yeah.
Well, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, what we've seen through our years and years of doing this is, and definitely your points are very valid, but what we've seen is that you probably get a truer measure if you make it optional.
Mm-hmm.
But with encouragement, a lot of encouragement, if you will.
How often would you conduct the surveys? Once a year?
At this point with the city, what I would do is conduct the survey as soon as possible. And what we're going to provide to you with the survey results are specific recommendations and timelines for how to improve satisfaction and engagement. And then depending on the rollout of those, the approval and rollout of those recommendations, remeasure in 6 months from there. And you should be able to get to a point where you do it annually thereafter. But you do want to see that more immediate return on your investment by seeing where you are today, what can be done. There's always opportunity to increase engagement, always. And then what can be done in the where you are in the future. To your point, Councilman, I'll go through that just a little bit more.
Thank you.
Okay. So on page 3 of the actual sample report, middle of the page, you'll see where this is an actual company, but the name has been removed to allow them to remain confidential. This particular company participation was 6 points below the national average. Now, and again, this is voluntary, so that in itself will tell you something. And it measured the engagement. So you can see from the pie chart and then the statistics to the right that this particular company has a little bit of a problem with disengaged employees, right? So you've got 49% of the participants that were disengaged and 8% that were highly disengaged. And you all know the definitions between engaged and disengaged. Yeah, it was in one of the documents. But your engaged people are going to be happier on the job, show up on time, tendency not to call in sick, be good motivational partners with the rest of the team that they're serving in, be supportive of the city's goals, and be very positive. Your disengaged employees, your highly disengaged employees can be helped. potentially, they can be helped by identifying what is the source problem for their disengagement and doing something about it. And if it's not corrected, it's like a cancer, it can spread, and that's not what anybody wants. On page 4, it goes on with a little bit more information about the engagement level compared to the national averages. Again, there'll be specific recommendations for each of these measures. And on page 5, we show the engagement with their employment or their job and their satisfaction with management. So you can see with this particular example, engagement with employment, which means satisfaction with their jobs at the time of the survey, extremely satisfied and satisfied was 47%, dissatisfied or extremely dissatisfied was 41%. Again, opportunities, right? And I know there might be some concerns about the timing for the survey based on all of the hard work that your folks have been doing after the storm. But my observations, and this is not scientific, is that I make a point to thank everybody as I'm driving along, and they're happy and they're positive and they're proud of the work they're doing. So that may not be a reason to wait. Satisfaction with management in this particular example, 52% satisfied or extremely satisfied, 46% dissatisfied and extremely dissatisfied. So the results are easy to read, they're easy to understand, and then the next several pages, and again this is just an example, give you, okay, what do I do with this information? It gives you the recommendations. The information that we would provide to you would give you the summary information here and a specific strategic timeline with action steps that, again, will be very easy to read.
Would it be broken down by departments or
yes.
Just one?
It can be broken down by department easily.
And would there be an opportunity to make a comment or not?
No, no comments. Not through this particular survey. We have another tool that can be used for that. But this is an objective metrics originated survey. And on the confidentiality piece, I did want to say that what might be important to you as well is that each individual would sign on to our headquarters website in Texas. That's where Profiles International is headquartered. And they're all given their own specific password. It's unique to them. In fact, they create it. And there's no way that anybody can see their answers, so it's highly confidential. And there's no way that any one person can complete the survey more than once. We send electronic reminders in 2 days and 4 days, depending on the timeline you all set for completion, if it's a week. And I also administer paper assessments for the individuals that cannot get on the internet or choose not to get on the internet.
Richard, does all city employees have access to email to do a survey?
They can certainly provide access through their supervisor's office, or I think, Judy, are you available to do a paper survey?
Mm-hmm. We can deliver, and what the process there, to remain confidential again, an objective is that I personally deliver and wait and pick up the surveys that are on paper.
So they don't have to rely on anybody else to mail it for them.
No.
You actually take care of that.
That way we guarantee the confidentiality of it.
Ms. Chung, I recognize this is just, you know, sort of a metrics survey where you just get, you know, just data.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe you've already answered this, but my question would be, certainly you're going to see, in any survey that you do for any employer, you're going to see some that are highly engaged, some that are highly disengaged, some that are highly satisfied, some that are highly unsatisfied. You, within the survey at all, do you show a comparison with similar entities? In other words, you know, let's say ours showed 50% mm-hmm. satisfied, 25% unsatisfied. Is there a comparison with other similar cities
mm-hmm.
or employers?
That's a great question. We do it by industry and by level.
Okay.
So depending on how you want it measured. But because the city has different departments, it will be very interesting, I think, for you to see each department and how they compare against another. You can also do levels within that department. It's very rich information.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. And you'll see in the pages of recommendations that they're going to be very unique to the city's results, but this gives you an idea of what we've done in the past. And the cost for this is, we believe it's a very good value proposition for you to consider. The cost is $5.50 per employee, and that includes taking the assessment, measuring the results through our headquarters in Texas. They provide the results to me confidentially, and then I debrief you. And we also provide you with recommendations and the strategic timeline to go with that.
When the results are in, are they always in graph or pie chart form? How will you deliver it to the city manager?
In both paragraph and metrics form.
Judy, is this something that you would see the staff distributing to the various departments, or would you do that, or how is that done so that each employee gets a copy?
Yeah, it's really important. That's a great question, Mayor. Thank you. It's really important that the results are not just a flash in the pan, but what you want to do is you want to show the employees the results, but also, without sounding, you want to show that you care enough that you're going to do XYZ steps. And they know that you care. I mean, that's a given. But yes, I would coordinate that and provide recommendations to Mr. Pierce and to you all. The delivery is very important.
One quick question. Do you have, or how many questions are we, is the survey, for instance?
The survey includes 22 questions, so it's not 100 questions that a lot of companies use, because ours are, again, scientifically validated. You can ask 10 questions or one question and get the same necessary response.
What I was thinking of is a lot of surveys build in inconsistency indicators.
Yes.
You know, they'll ask the question one way and commit the person, and then they'll ask a very, very similar question later on. And if people are just, you know, checking off this, that, and the other, mm-hmm. it'll show up inconsistency, and the validity is reduced. Mm-hmm. I was just wondering if you did anything like that.
That's a really good point. We do that. We ask a question in both the positive context and the negative context. So if someone is going down just answering threes, for example, on every question, it will show a distortion value, and that assessment result will be thrown out. They'll have to retake it.
Okay. Ma'am, is this actual data? It says City of Aiken, example only, Department of Public Safety. Is this actual data? Is this a... Did you take the data for it, or this is just a pure example?
It's just a pure example. It's from another company, but I wanted you to see what the format would look like if you were looking at your own report. It's not actual data.
Oh, it says example only, but then under it says Department of Public Safety, City of Aiken. So I just... It's just a guesstimate from your company. You didn't interview anybody.
No, it's not even a guesstimate at this point, sir. It's just a representative example.
And again, Mr. Edward, the directive I had from council was to identify a group that could conduct this survey. We want to bring that to council and then proceed.
Mm-hmm. So with our process, we feel it's value added for you. It's not a huge investment, but it gives you the information you need with specific strategic next steps. It's confidential. It's all through our headquarters in Waco, Texas, and it's objective.
Do you have a copy of the questions, or did I miss it in the information you gave out?
No, I did not include a copy of the questions.
Do you normally give those out?
We do if it's requested. The questions are all, as I mentioned, validated by our scientific, I call them PhD department. But we can provide them.
I would think that we would want to know the questions. I know I would, just for interest, if for no other reason. If we get into that. And there are 22 questions, you said.
22 with the optional 23rd question, which will help you identify it by location, by department, by level.
How long would it take to run it through all the employees? If it's individual, how long do you give them to do it? Is it a week or 2 weeks bank for responses?
The timeline would be set by the city. We recommend no more than 2 weeks. A week would be better. And again, I'm happy to do the legwork in getting the paper assessments out and collected.
Is there a minimum level of participation that you would see to make a judgment on the validity of the survey for the entire organization?
No. The validity is within the assessment itself or the survey itself. We really do want to encourage at least 60% participation. And there's ways that can be done, which I would share with whoever's appropriate. But you definitely do want to see the highest level of participation.
So would you draw a conclusion if you only received a 25% participation?
I would not consider that valid.
Okay.
No, I see your question. Thank you.
What would be your cutoff? Excuse me.
Well, 50% is what we say. To me, that's a very low participation level, and I'd really like you to see 80%. And it's a top-down effort from the leadership down, and the way it should be rolled out is that the city's very interested in the employees' opinions and feelings, and that their participation is highly desirable, and I can give you a script according to what has been successful for us. People love to give their opinion. If you give them the opportunity,
right,
they generally do love to give you their opinion.
Yeah. Especially if they know it's not going to be filtered out to everybody or friends or whatever.
Mm-hmm. And the role is very important.
Well, this sure looks very professional to me, and you've got a lot of experience, obviously, in your company. How long have you had your company?
I've had my company for 3 years now, and been a partner with 12,000 International. And even as a CEO in Hawaii, my mission was always to help my people succeed, because if the employees succeed, then the organization can't help but succeed. So I always put the people first. And we did really well, really, really well. Grew the company considerably.
Mm-hmm. And could you tell us, what have you seen over a number of these companies doing this with their employees, what have you seen the trend being as far as improving and,
mm-hmm.
and or some not improved, perhaps, or
it depends on if you implement the next steps, the action plans.
Yeah.
That's, if it's just like I mentioned, a flash in the pan, you can... you can actually send the wrong signal. Well, we'll take this assessment, we'll get your opinion, but if you don't do anything with it, then, it can have the wrong perspective for the employee. But that's why our what we do is reliable in terms of measuring improvement, and from a criterion, not to throw around all these C words, but from a criterion perspective, we do demonstrate improvement. And that's the bottom line.
And you identify corrective measures, if you will, or you do? Okay.
Recommendations.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, sir. This was a presentation for information based on the directive I had from council mayor. So, again, we're prepared to go forward. We can certainly present council with the questions if that's what council would desire, and then we're ready to proceed. But, of course, under our procurement code and everything, this would be appropriate. We're talking about a little less than $2,500.
Can we participate?
I mean, again, that's up to council. You want to participate. I thought you wanted an employee survey that you didn't look at.
I get a W-2.
That's great. That's great. We'd love for you to participate.
What's the next step? I mean, do we have others coming in to talk to us? Or?
No, we had spoken with Ms. Chun after the meeting last time, Mayor. And again, from what we've looked at, we did talk with some other firms. They were either much higher or did not have the service that we needed. We frankly had several consulting companies that pushed us towards the Survey Monkey. They would help us with the interpretation of the data. But my understanding was that, you know, while some folks in council were comfortable with Survey Monkey, others were not. And this seemed to be a reasonable alternative to try to meet all of council's concerns in conducting the employee engagement survey.
Mm-hmm. I think, Mr. Mayor, what we need to do is this is good information, and we'll just take it under advisement as individuals.
And again, at some point, Mayor, I'm trying to discharge the duty that council has put upon me. Mm-hmm. We're prepared to go forward when council's prepared for us to go forward.
Okay.
Thank you for the information.
Yes.
Excellent.
Any other comments from council about what we've heard?
Thank you very much.
Good. All right. Jenny, thank you so much for being with us. And it's very obvious that you've got a wonderful company. Very successful, I'm sure, over the years. Thank you very much.
And James, thanks for being with us tonight as well.
Yes, James. Okay, under old business, first item, approval of appointments and discussion of appointees to various city boards, commissions, and committees. Mr. Pierce, please.
Mayor, thank you very much. Just by way of update, Councilmember Price had mentioned Todd Lista for reappointment at our last meeting. When we followed up with him, he's actually withdrawn his name from...
I actually made that...
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm sorry,
but that's
Dave.
Okay, and we have been in touch, and I have another one in its place.
Okay. I apologize. I should have looked at my notes a little more carefully. But anyway, we do know that Mr. Lista withdrew his name. That's why it's not in the list tonight. Tonight, for consideration, we have Peggy Penland for the Accommodations Tax Committee. That was a term that would last through March 25, 2016. And appointment of Hank Mormon to the Building Code Board of Appeals. That term would expire May 12, 2016. So for consideration tonight would be Peggy Penland to the Accommodations Tax Committee and Hank Mormon to the Building Code Board of Appeals.
Okay, thank you, sir. Do we have a motion and second for approval?
I so move, Mr. Mayor.
Second.
Okay, any discussion? If not, show hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Okay, thank you. Any nominations for reappointments?
I have two. I'd like to appoint Michael Gibbons from Golden Harvest Food Bank to the Accommodation Tax Committee or Commission, and John Brett to the Arts Commission.
Okay. Any others? If not, these will be on our meeting agenda for the next city council meeting. Thank you. Second reading.
Mayor, if I might just make a quick inquiry. Glenn, on Arts Commission, do we need to have a area specialty for the appointment, or just that's Ms. Diggs' appointment?
Actually, he has a background in arts, and he's done several one-man shows at USCA tonight at the Eldridge Center.
Okay, so he's an actual local artist then?
Yes.
Okay.
Glenn may have a comment.
I don't have a list. I think it says on the list what category she appoints to.
Yeah.
Is that on there?
If if I can find the commission. Here we go.
About survey, bring arts.
Education.
Okay. He'd be replacing.
He would be replacing Jack Benjamin.
Okay. So he would need to be in the education realm.
Okay.
Very good. Thank you, Glenn. Okay, item two, first reading of an ordinance to adjust the water and sewer rates. Mr. Pierce, please.
Mayor, thank you very much. Of course, as part of our annual budgeting process, we consider our water and sewer enterprise fund. That fund is a separate budget that supports itself, and at least it's supposed to. Of course, under state law, an enterprise fund has its own revenue and has its own expenditures. Those funds are kept distinct and separate from the rest of the budget. We've had a work session this afternoon. The ordinance that's under consideration is entitled An Ordinance Establishing New Charges for Water and Sewer Service. From time to time, of course, and what we've spent the month of February doing when we're not busy cleaning up damage from ice storm packs, as you'll see on page 57 of the agenda packet, through the first half of the year and now with our January billings in hand, we're realizing about a 10.5% shortfall in revenues for our system. As we discussed in the work session, and forgive me, I'm trying to find that page. You've had presentations from both George Grinton, who is the Director of Engineering and Utilities, and from Kim, who is Director of our Finance Department. And on page 19, there's a summary of costs there. The capital expenses, of course, were gone over in detail by George, salaries, the payment we have to make to the Aiken County Public Service, sewer treatment facility, Horse Creek, for the flow that we send to them for treatment. In addition to salaries, we have benefits and insurance, other operating expenses, depreciation, electricity costs, debt service, franchise, administrative, and contingency fees, and chemicals. The debt service that you see itemized on page 19, that's that top slide, is $1,089,730. That debt service reflects the last payment that we have to make on our utility system bond. That was refinanced in 2009 to save interest costs, and that will pay out the end of this year. At the time of that scheduled payment, the city of Aiken will be completely debt-free. There would be no general obligation bond. There would be no utility bond that would be payable. With that in mind, and knowing that that payment would not have to be made after December, which would mean in our fiscal year 15-16, we're not scheduling any bond service payments. That money becomes available to help us pay for capital projects and other expenses for the utility. In addition to that money, we do collect depreciation every year. That's scheduled at $1,200,000. Now, that's not money we just sit on. That's money that we collect because we know the water and sewer system has to be updated. Many sections of it can be as old as 50 to 60 years old and are in need of replacement. Furthermore, Mayor, as you've pointed out so many times, the city of Aiken has experienced population growth since the 1890s. Our population numbers have never gone down with that decennial census. That means that we need to be upgrading our system and expanding our system to handle the growing population that comes to Aiken. As part of those expenses, we do have the Silver Bluff Water Treatment Plant and deep water wells that we are working on and in the process of constructing. Council has seen that construction on Silver Bluff. There have been some newspaper articles about it as well. That's an over $4 million project. An additional project we have is $1,400,000 for the installation of filtration equipment at our historic Shiloh Springs water treatment facility. Now, $1 million of that expense is covered by a state authority forgivable loan, but we still have to pay the additional $400,000 for the filtration installation. And another significant expense to the system, which falls under the depreciation because depreciation helps us buy replacements for aging equipment, would be our water meter replacement program. That's budgeted at $600,000 for this year, and then we have three additional years at $1 million each while we replace 19,000 water meters. The meters that we have a wireless sending unit, and that battery recharges, and over time the battery just doesn't recharge anymore and the unit has to be replaced. Another issue that we have with the existing water meter metal base is that it has mechanical moving parts, a brass impeller that spins, and over time, just as the tires on your car wear out, these impellers wear out as well. So George Grinton and Kim have spent a lot of time with Badger Meter. We have looked at some prototype units and tried some sample units in the field, discovered some issues. We've met again with Badger, addressed those issues, and we believe we have a good unit to replace our existing units. But, of course, that comes at an expense. We feel it's very important to have a scheduled replacement of these meters because we want to charge our customers what they owe and not one dime more. So accurate metering is essential for that. So those are three big major projects that are not covered by capital project sales tax expense because that was specifically balloted in 2010 to cover water and sewer infrastructure replacement. That is aging systems that had to be replaced. And with our operations issues that we have struggled with the water utility and the sewer utility, really for the last 20 years, if you look back through the minutes, back in 1994, we were talking about issues like aging infrastructure, not wanting to adversely impact folks on fixed income, but to have a system that would operate. And we have raised rates over the years. The most recent rate increase was back in 2012. That was an 8% increase. Those funds were specifically adopted by council for us to hire two staff member crews to work on waterline replacements. At the time, we were suffering a lot of water leaks. We were losing revenue. And these crews have worked to use PEX-A pipe to replace the old black plastic pipe. And council members will recall we had extensive presentations about that. In addition to the 6% funds to hire these crews, we have hired these crews, we've kept them staffed, we have provided them with salary and benefits, also with tools and equipment and heavy machinery to do this work, was a 2% inflation factor. Again, that was in 2012. Since that time, we've experienced between 1.4% and 1.8% in inflation, but we have not increased the rates. And as has been discussed in this room and recently in the work session this afternoon, that's just not sustainable. The money that we have is worth less because it's impacted by inflation. So, again, in meeting with George and discussing things with Kim, George came on board as your director in May of last year and has done a tremendous job working to identify those areas that are in need of immediate replacement or maintenance work, establishing a maintenance program and identifying needs that will keep us in compliance with DHEC requirements. So the capital that's projected that is needed is to work on the system to replace its aging equipment. We have seen a downward trend in our revenues, and again, fortunately, we had depreciation in place to help cover expenses, but we can't continue to rely on that, or we'll be having conversations again, as we had 20 years ago, about the utility system actually coming up short for money. It's just not sustainable. We believe with a 10.5% increase as contained in the materials on page 19 that the city would be able to recoup some of the shortfall this year, and that would be in anticipation of a rate increase going in effect in April. But then next year, we feel that we would be in a better position to fund the depreciation we need to not only pay for ongoing projects, but undertake these additional projects that I've described. Certainly, we can take this opportunity to put in place a review system where we make sure that once we have 6 months in the revenue in January, we can have a work session and discuss the utility system revenues, because that helps us with budgeting. And I think based on the discussion with council, the work session, the discussion we've had at the staff level, we anticipate that would be very helpful to us to know what council's thoughts are. Nobody wants to increase rates. We've been through a terrible, terrible economic time. But the harsh reality is, despite our best efforts to economize, to make sure we spend wisely, to make sure that we put resources where resources are needed, again, with inflation, with the tremendous rainfall that we've had, and just the sheer fact that we're experiencing a reduction in revenue while our costs remain constant, and in several instances increase, whether we're talking about electrical rates, you know, chemical rates, that's something beyond our control. And again, our ability to absorb those costs and not raise customer rates, we're just at the end of the rope when it comes to that. So it is with great reluctance that we come to you, but with an eye towards the future and with an eye towards making sure we have a system that's funded so we can do the work that George has identified, not just to comply with South Carolina Department of Health and Environmental Control requirements, but just because we're aware of situations and they need to be addressed. They can't be postponed anymore. We just strongly feel that this approach is the approach that we need to do at this time to make sure we can do the work that I'm sure that council and the citizens would want us to do. Otherwise, we would just be shirking our responsibility.
Let me add one thing to this. As Richard has said, we've tried to work without having to do this for a number of years, other than 2012. And we compare ourselves with about 30 other cities and have been doing that for years. And even with this rate increase, we're still going to be, what, fourth from the bottom of those 30? Is that about right? Fourth or third?
Really third or fourth.
Third or fourth.
Yes, that's right.
So not that that might make anybody more happy about paying a tax, but it does give a perspective of what other cities are doing and have done and the charges that they have had. So,
and it is significant, Mayor, when we look at that list, they have similarly sized cities or utility systems. That's why we look at them. And since 2012, at least a dozen have raised their rates since 2012. And it's just an unfortunate fact of life. One thing, too, in your agenda packet on page 59, that's a good recap that shows the expenses we're going to have, how we're going to construct the water plant on Silver Bluff Road, and then pay that debt back to ourselves rather than go out and incur the expense of having to get another utility bond. So while we won't be totally debt-free, we will be paying back money that we borrowed from ourselves. Mm-hmm. Another thing to point out, too, is typically the state would look at average consumption at 802 cubic feet per month. Our experience is about 800 cubic feet per month would be an average for the customers in our system. And for that average customer, that would increase the bill about $4 a month, approximately $1 a week. So if everybody could spend one more dollar a week with our water system, we feel we'll make great gains towards doing the work we need to do to keep it functioning properly and within DHEC guidelines.
Okay.
So for council consideration on first reading would be this adjustment to the water and sewer rates, Mayor.
All right. Do we have a motion and a second for approval on first reading?
Mr. Mayor, I would like to move that we suspend the rules and discuss this before we have an official motion, if other councils would agree with, okay, other council members would agree with that.
I'll second. Have a second on that. Show of hands to suspend the rules. Okay, passes.
I think one thing that we need to look at, and maybe if we can put up page 54, this item, it's page 54, and this one is this page here. While she's doing that, one of my concerns is the, how the ordinance written, it says refer to Exhibit A, and Exhibit A shows the rate increases. But there's other things that that I think we need to document there. And when Ms. Riddell gets that up there,
okay. Yes. Yeah, that's by memo.
Next page.
Did you want the ordinance or the exhibit, Mr. Evans?
Yes. Wait.
55 is the ordinance, 54 is the memo.
The seven item. That's it there, that page there. Okay. That's the seven items that Mr. Pierce referred to. When we made the raise the rates in 2012, we specifically said, and I'll pick on the water meters, we said to that increase would be sufficient to fund one-third of the meter replacements for 3 years in a row. And that was a number of us' interpretation in there. Then on item two up here, we have fund the water meter replacements over a three-year period. And I guess my concern is, and maybe the city attorney can help me out, do we need to put these specific things in the ordinance so that we remember next year, 2 years from now, what we voted on to do? Because we voted on already to replace them in 2012.
If I may, Mayor, if I think we look at the minutes, the discussion on the 8% increase was 3 two-man crews to replace water lines, not water meters.
But it was to fund the replacement of water meters in 3 years. And I mean, that was very specific from Mr. Morris's memo. And he also addressed the filter project in there. And that's water under the bridge. Well, maybe not a good analogy, but it's done. But I think here, knowing that next year, unless we have a very dry year, we're going to be sitting here talking about the same thing again. And I'm not so sure we shouldn't be more specific what we talk about and have them in the ordinance so there's no question what we said. You know, Mr. Pierce has one opinion of what we did, and I had another one. And I think that's where we are, Mr. Smith, that we might need to be more specific, and now council has to agree with that. But there's a number of things on here that all are long-term, and I don't want to have to sit here next year, 2 years from now, and say, oh, we're funding the water meter replacement over a three-year period, because that has actually started, and that means there's got to be about 4,000 meters a year replaced. And it needs to be done. I'm not debating that. What I'm debating is that we put more detail in the ordinance, because there's a lot of things that are on here that are important. And if we don't fund them, and we are a year from now we're discussing this, we say, hey, we said we were going to do this, but the funds were not available. And I think that gives us a very good point of discussion in the future to say, hey, we didn't have enough money to fund what we needed to do. And right now, in my opinion, we funded it 2 years ago. And we have started, but we haven't gotten on it. Now, I need some, you know, what I'm asking for is a detail in the ordinance so next year I can come back and say, wait a minute, we voted on that last year. And now we're saying three more years to do the meters. And there may be a good reason for that next year.
It's simple enough to cut and paste the seven items that are in Mr. Pierce's memo
and make them a Section 2 in the ordinance, if that's what council desires to do.
Well, that's why I'm putting it up, because I can guarantee you next year we're going to have the same conversation. You know, if it's a real dry year, we probably won't have it. If it's a year like we've been having, we're going to have this discussion again. And the thing is, we don't want to spend, Mr. Pierce said this in the beginning, this is really a separate budget item. It has nothing to do with the 300-page monster. I mean, when we deal with this, if the money's not here, Ms. Abney and Mr. Grinton can't do the work. That's the bottom line.
That's my question. If I kind of agree with you that you want to be specific, but if we put these seven specific things in the ordinance, and then let's say revenues are still off, way off, next year, and we can't do these seven things, then we'd be in violation of our own ordinance. Does that cause a problem?
I think it's generic enough. Council could use it as a guideline for purposes of evaluating progress. I think that's what you want to do.
Yeah, I want something that to judge ourselves, if you will. And maybe, and that's why I asked Mr. Smith, and maybe these should be guidelines. Maybe is a better word than the law of the land, so to speak. But as you get to the bottom of the page, they're pretty general. Mm-hmm. But, you know, 1, 2, and 3 are pretty specific. And
yes.
But if we use them as guidelines to say, okay, we didn't replace a third of the meters when we're looking back a year. Well, why didn't we? Well, we didn't have enough money to do it.
It's beyond that. I mean, we chose not to replace the meters for whatever reason. It's easy to say you didn't have enough money. Whatever money you had, you used for something else. I mean, I don't know how you tie anybody's hands on this stuff. And we've been fighting with water meters since I've almost been on council. We've been talking about the water plant since I've been on council. It keeps getting delayed. And I don't know that putting these seven items in an ordinance is going to bind. I think you're looking to bind the city into doing this, and I'm not sure that you can do that.
Well, the water meter installation is certainly underway. The water plant construction is certainly underway. If it helps council at all, I mean, I don't think staff has any problem with that at all. We were trying to capture, that's what I was trying to do in the memo, is capture why we're here asking for this money at this time. I mean, obviously, we're late in the budget year, but we're looking not only at this budget year, but the next budget year as well, to make sure that we have the money we need.
This is next budget year. It gives us a couple hundred grand in the 13-14, but really this is a full year for 14 and 15.
Right, we were hoping 300 grand this year. We're hoping.
Did we not have water meters in our budget, our current budget? Or last year's budget?
You have $600,000 worth. So that's okay. 1 year. Then you've got $1 million each for the next three.
We're now in February, March, April, May, June. So we've got 4 months.
And we are replacing water meters.
Are we going to spend $600,000 in the next 4 months?
I doubt it.
That's my point.
Well, I understand. And if I may, just to address your concern, Mr. Dewar, there's a very valid reason why not. When we tried the prototype meters, we had problems with them canceling out when folks watered their yards, which happens very often in the summertime. And what we ran into with the technology is that when the water irrigation system would come on and the meter would overload, it took a manual reset. Well, we've got a lot of folks that irrigate their yards, and I don't know if we have sufficient staff to go reset manually meters, you know, in the summertime. So what we did is we worked with Badger and then developed technology that we would not have that problem. So once that was solved, we began.
When was it solved?
I think that was just very recently, frankly. We just had a visit from them 2-3 weeks ago.
Yeah, but, you know, my only frustration is that we can say we're going to do these things, and as I mentioned, we've had the Silver Bluff plan construction in the budget. There's no question there've been valid reasons why we didn't do it, but I just don't think you can bind the city simply by putting them in the ordinance.
Well, and of course, again, when we did the last increase, we specified what it was for. We certainly had a discussion about the needs for the entire system. So I don't disagree with you, Mr. Ebner. My recollection, though, is that we actually tied the increase to a specific thing, which was additional staff and water line replacement. That's my recollection.
Well, there were six items that we tied it to, and that was one of them. The water meters beginning to pay for the Silver Bluff tank and the Shiloh Springs, and then also potentially design work for the the radium solution, and then also the water issues. Shallow Creek.
Right. And again, those projects are underway, and we do know we're going to have those future expenses.
Well, I guess I like to count for the money a little better than that, but what are we going to do a year from now when we don't have a third of the meters changed? What are we going to say then? You know, I'm not blue sky in this. I mean, this is going to be a real question 12 months from now.
Right. And again, as part of the budget process, if we have this rate increase in hand, we can budget accordingly. There's a great opportunity after the first 6 months of the operating 14-15 budget for us to look at where we are on revenues and on project completion and have a work session after the first of the year. That would be in January 2015, and just assess our progress at that time.
Can we go to page 59, please, ma'am? And this is what it looks like. Yeah, that page. Can you turn it 90 degrees?
Yeah, that's the payout for the water plant construction.
It's a question for Miss Abney.
Come on up, Ken.
Is it? Can you turn it? Or we can. Cut off the bottom of it. The question I've got is the Ms. Abney, in 2014 we pay off $1.5 million, or just about $1.5 million, for the Crossland Park loan. Is that reflected on this sheet? I don't see it on here because the as a designated
million,
item.
It's $1,460,000. I think we do reflect that on the special holding sheet that I emailed out to council this week.
Right.
Or today, as a matter of fact.
Shouldn't it be on this sheet? But shouldn't it be on this sheet because it affects the payout by $1.5 million, and right now we pay out to 2022, and I'm coming to that in a minute. Shouldn't it be on this sheet of paper?
It's not on that iteration. We have another iteration that was done in later February when we discussed this. And if you add that payment back, that reduces the amount of loan that would have to be borrowed for the projects. And it would reduce what's shown on that as $5.5 million to just over $4 million, $4,040,000.
All right. But shouldn't it be reflected on here because it changes your payout period, does it not? Are you going to just reduce the amount of payout?
We could reduce the time and the payments. I mean, that's
okay.
And we could have that done in time for second
reading. Well, and the thing is, we show paying off the current loans by 2021, okay? Now, between now and 2021, there's got to be other things that we're going to, major things that we're going to have to do. And if we don't do something to pay off this a little sooner, go ahead and use the $1,030,000 that comes off of the 2009 revenue bond.
We have to pay that.
I know, but what I'm saying is we haven't put any room in here for any other major projects until 2020.
Under the current structure, but again, we can make those revisions in time for
the
second reading.
Yeah. Even if she puts $1.5 million in there, it becomes 2020. And then if we do any other major projects, it's going to have to come out of a raise of the water and sewer rates.
And again,
I just want everybody
actually
to understand that, that this thing is, we've got to pay off the past, and we got to be careful how much we borrow because it jacks the rates up. 10% is a nice rate, but we sure don't want 15 and 20 a year.
Well, exactly. I think it actually potentially moves us back to 2019, but we'll run that calculation, Mr. Ebner, for the second reading for sure. And again, we do have these needs. We do have to pay for them, and what we've done historically is pay as we go. Now, a project like the water plant, which is over $4 million, we don't have that money to pay for that all at once. That's why we have the scheduled repayment plan, just so we all know, rather than paying off a bond, we're actually paying money back to ourselves.
I understand that.
And so you can churn that.
My point is, in the next 4 or 5 years, we don't, without raising the water rates, we can't do any major projects. We have to get along with the $1.2 million we're saying we're going to raise every year. And that's the message we need to be sure we get across and everybody understands what I'm saying.
Right.
The other part of this, and Ms. Abney, in on June 30th of 2014, this year, we'll be able to reevaluate how much the loan is because we have a water and sewer depreciation account balance, right?
We do. That's what I emailed out to you this afternoon. It's $1,542,000.
All right, so when we get to when this particular year in 2013-14, which is the fiscal year, is June 30th.
Mm-hmm. Ends June 30th.
That we're going to have enough expended on the water plant that this water and sewer depreciation account balance should go to zero, right?
Well, by June 30th of 2014, we would know how much we needed to borrow to that point based on how much of the water plant has been constructed by June 30th.
And you'll use up the $1.7 million first.
Now, let's see,
the number you just quoted is what is in the balance now?
Oh, it's about $1.5 million, but now some of that is committed for in the budget for expenditures this year. So whatever that net figure
I'm
is,
trying to differentiate between the two, because the balance
fine.
Will
That's
actually
fine.
Be less.
It would be, yes, sir, because we have items in the budget to pay for.
Why I'm saying this to council, we have to be careful. Every year we've been kind of moving this stuff down, and this year, what we're voting on now, we really need to be sure that we understand what the future holds. And if we have a real rainy year, next year may be another 8 to 10% increase in water rates to pay for what we got to do. We can't keep postponing the payment of these either. I don't think that's just a, if you will, good for the citizens of the city.
And staff certainly disagrees. That would be a disservice just to kick a can down the road. We want to pay as we go.
Based on what we know now and what we've heard, these numbers are just still... let me just say, based on what we know now, don't we know for a fact that we're going to have to increase water rates again next year?
I think we have to look at the revenue experience we have from now to December before we answer that question. That's why January is a great time to reassess.
Well, I understand that. We know we've got inflation, don't we?
Well, it's a good point, Mr. Dwyer. You're absolutely right. We know we have an inflation factor that we need to be budgeting every year. Then as far as the projects that we want to complete within a year, as well as the payments we want to make every year on the major projects that we're doing, we know those figures.
Well, I guess what I'm saying is I'm not at all happy to even be asked, but I understand why. I'm not at all happy to be asked to approve a 10% increase. That's a heck of a lot of money. And based on what I'm seeing here, I don't get a warm fuzzy that we're not going to be in the same situation next year. We're talking about a lot of major projects. I mean, we got new interfund loans of $5 million. I'm not sure I know how to read this chart and where I add, but where are we borrowing the $5 million in 2014, 2015? I mean, it's an interfund. Which fund are we borrowing it from?
Typically, it would be from the general fund.
Now, can we do that to go into an enterprise fund?
Now, we have done that. Mr. Smith could speak to that. We typically have done that through a loan document, so we keep everything above board and documented for our auditors.
Have we actually done the loan? Did we do a loan document for Crossland Park?
We did the one.
Yes, you did. Sure
but we did the loan for the $4.5 million tank is out of general fund.
The water treatment plant.
The water treatment plant.
The $4.5 million for the water treatment plant is part of this $5 million.
We designated that out of the general fund, if I'm not mistaken.
Hmm? Yes.
Done that, and that's the proper way to
do it.
The ordinance specifies which fund you're borrowing from.
It did specify it on that one.
And if it'll help you, Mr. Dwyer, we can give you copies of those documents. Not a problem at all. And again, remember now, Crosland Park, the money went from the utility fund to the Crosland Park fund. Mm-hmm. So now it's going to repay by the end of this year. That was the later than the end of the year.
Now, that's the one that's a little bit shaky. You're supposed to be water and sewer related, so we won't do that anymore.
We won't do that anymore. That predates me. We're not doing that anymore. But the point is a good one, Mr. Ebner, that certainly to the extent that we have cash on hand to put towards the project, but now we do need to keep in mind that the auditors look in our budget for 3 to 6 months of operating expenses on hand in order for us to get a clean financial report from them. Now, that's total. That does look at all the budgets, not just the utility
budget. Yes, but water and sewer fund is a month-to-month fund.
It really is.
Yeah. I mean, it's independent. And I guess I think Mr. DeWar's question is very valid.
Absolutely.
I don't think that council can sit here and say that we won't have an increase in February of next year. I think that's to be determined, but for us to say the 10% may get us what we need for the year 2014 and 15, but next year we're going to sit here and have this same discussion.
Because you'll be looking at 15, 16, then you'll be looking at 16, 17.
You don't need to raise the money for 2015 and 16 this year. This is 2014, 15, next year's budget we're talking about here.
And this 10% increase is going to fully fund depreciation of what, $1.2 million a year?
That's the goal. The goal is to fund the $1.2 million.
Goal is a vague term. We're asking for hard cash from the citizens. Are we going to have enough money to fully fund depreciation?
Mr. Rock, I can't tell you in March of 2014 how we're going to end in June of 2015.
Yeah, we're projecting a deficit at this point.
You're projecting a deficit.
At this point, right. So, again, we're trying to look down the road, not just from this year, although we're trying to recover some of that to fund as much as we possibly can. But if your question is about the 14-15 budget, that is our goal, is to get back to fully funding depreciation.
We're projecting a deficit in funding, fully funding depreciation for the 2014-15 year?
Right. If we were going to fully fund depreciation this year, then we would need to recover the 10% that this budget is down, which is about $700,000. If we put this increase in effect, if you pass the ordinance tonight and you pass the ordinance on the 24th, then the April billing, which means we'd have April, May, and June, mm-hmm. that of the $700,000 shortfall, we estimate that about $300,000 would be covered by the increase this year.
So we're going into next year with a $400,000 shortfall, and we can't say for sure. Is it likely that we'll, based on a 10% increase effective April 1st, is it likely that we'll collect enough to fully fund depreciation?
That's our goal.
Yeah, and again, I know you don't like the goal word.
Yeah,
that's what we want to do.
Yeah.
That's the calculation we've done now. We're very hopeful we'll be able to do that. But again, let's assess it mid-year to see if we're on track.
But I think we could clearly convey the fact that, as based on what we know now, we're at least going to ask for an increase next February of inflation. And maybe more.
And the answer is yes to
the
that.
Answer
and we don't
want
to.
Yes.
We want to be straight up with the citizen. The answer
no, absolutely.
We've got to work to avoid a 10% increase. I mean, that's we got to do whatever we can. People don't like any increase, but you know, a 3-4%, 5%, you can live with. But I mean, 10%, and I know it's only $4. But
well, no, and again, for the dollar a week. What that dollar a week will do for us is we have a major ice storm, we won't be like other utility systems. When you turn that tap, water's going to come out, and it's going to be clean water that you can drink. That's what George works every day on.
Yeah, okay.
All right, so right now we're voting on a 10%. We're ready to make a motion or not make a motion for a 10% increase.
Absolutely.
First reading.
That's right.
Big,
first reading.
Awful silent.
That's right.
Just
first reading.
That's right. Do we have it?
If I may, did you want me to include language from the memo, or how did you want to handle that?
I'm going to make the motion. I'm going to be sure Ms. Diggs is okay with where we're going.
I mean, nobody wants to increase the rates because we know that there are so many people that are already struggling. But there are situations associated with this that's just beyond our control. We talked about it today. We all know it. We all hate it. But we know we got to do what we got to do.
Okay. Well, I just wanted to be sure that you know, we talked about it for an hour and a half. Mr. Mayor, do we need to vote to come out of discussion first? Mr. Mayor, I'd like to move that city attorney have the ordinance authorize a 10% increase for starting, I think it was April 1st. I would like the seven items in there as guidelines or discussion items, whatever we want to say, so we know what we talked about today, mm-hmm. and also that page 59 be updated to reflect the Crossing Park payoff loan.
Yes, sir. Again, with that addition, your expectation, just so I understand council's expectation, would be that we adjust the payout accordingly.
Adjust the payout accordingly, but I would like that sheet updated so that next year when we sit here, we can say, okay, are we in trouble on paying the loans or not?
You want it updated for the second reading?
Yes. Yeah. She just got to turn back one page and it's already updated. Yeah. So that's my motion.
Okay. Do we have a second? I'll second it.
Got 2 seconds. Okay.
Second. Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously.
And that goes for all of us.
Item 3, second reading and public hearing of an ordinance to advance CPST3 funds from Crossland Park sewer upgrade. Mr. Pierce, please.
Mayor, thank you very much. The title of the revised ordinance is an ordinance authorizing borrowing from the City of Aiken General Fund reserve accounts as outlined in this ordinance for the purpose of funding sewer system upgrade in Crossland Park. The revised ordinance reflects a loan of $1,608,319.50. When I had come to you last time, we had thought we needed to add $194,000 for sewer and manhole rehabilitation in Southwood and $35,893.80 for a Boardman Road waterline project. But council, actually, when we had looked at those funds being needed, council directed that we repay those funds out of the initial check we received for capital project sales tax 3 payment, which we did. So that's already been repaid. For consideration on second reading tonight is the advance of the $1,608,319.50 for sewer lines in Crossland Park.
Mr. Mayor, I so move.
Sir?
I second.
Okay, good. Any discussion?
One discussion item. Oh, I have one item.
Yeah, I just want to point out that, again, we got $8 million. We've talked about the work session, and this contributes to it. We will spend $7 million by 2017-2018, so we're running close to maxing that out. We go a couple of years with no capital projects money. There's only two other places we get money to capital projects, and one is a loan and one we don't want to talk about in this council.
All right. The item I want to bring up, and we've had 2 payments from capital project sales tax, and I talked to county of treasurer today because it's almost 30% or 40% low. And if this can, so I think it's something that I'm going to have on the agenda next time, talk about capital project tax overall. But we got $1 million, or roughly, what, in February, I think it was. And we were expecting 1.3. And the state hasn't answered back the county treasurer. Did they make a mistake on projections or what happened? But it's way off by about 20% to 30% for the first payments of this. And what the county treasurer, which is Mr. Jason Goins, is hoping that they made a mistake. But if they continue this trend, we really have to look at the end of our list. We have $44 million projected, and if you project what he has now, it's about $30 to $31 million. So, man, that's a kick in the shin, so we need to really watch that. And I don't know how to solve it. So Mr. Goins is supposed to send all of us an email on that when he finds out if there was a mistake made or what happened.
When's the next payment due to be received?
3 months from February.
Right, so probably sometime in the early summer.
Okay. Yeah.
So when that one comes in, if it's $300,000 to $400,000 low, is not a very good indication.
Well, and you hate to blame it on the weather, but the national trends show that retail sales are down through the polar vortex and the terrible weather that we've had.
Yeah, and this was from September, October, November. So, but anyway, I'll just raise the alarm for you.
We might want to have that on the agenda when that May number comes in.
Yeah, I'll just wait for the May number.
We'll be happy to do that. But now I understand that you would like an agenda item just to review capital project sales tax 2 and 3 or 3?
I think we need to do 2 and 3 because some of them are tied together, and I'll send you an email.
Sure.
And the reason I bring it up is that as some of these things that we're thinking of doing, we would skip some other projects, but we shouldn't skip too far down the list because we may have 5 or 6 or some of these projects that won't make it in Capital 3.
So, that'd be a shame.
Anyway, so that was my comment.
Yeah, that'd be a real shame. Those are very, very valuable
projects. Richard, can we reallocate CPST 3 monies, like, you know, drop a project and get some of the money from that and put it on a project?
Mr. Smithel has researched that extensively. Mr.
Hunt, about taking money from Capital Projects 3 and adding it to 2?
No. Just change the target where the money's targeted.
You've got to follow the budget, or you've got to follow the ballot question. Whatever was on the, what was on the ballot was actually approved by the voters, and you have to follow what was approved by the voters.
In that order.
Well, but we're not doing it.
We've had a lot of discussion about that. That's why I want Mr. Smith to speak first. In the ballot question, you actually, it was projected at $44,600,000. It does say, for the projects within the city of Aiken, which project shall be completed in the order determined by Aiken City Council. So, again, there's been some difference of opinion about whether council by a subsequent ordinance could reorder the projects. And then there's some sentiment too that if it's listed a certain way, then that's how you do the project. You do one, then do the next one.
But the Attorney General and Director of Revenue for South Carolina says.
No, what I'm saying though is if we determine the order in which the money's spent, if we have a real low, in our estimation, a low priority, we can put it on the end and be run out of money by the time we get to it. What do we do then?
You don't do the projects.
What we submitted to the voters for approval was a priority list of projects. Mm-hmm. And number one, remember, was the police computers. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so we have already prioritized them when we sent them to Aiken County to be put on the ballot. And so that's what the voters have approved. And we have a disagreement on whether or not we can... Well, never mind. We have a disagreement.
No, it's okay, Mr. Dwyer. I mean, I think it's a valid point. You did that by an ordinance. Yeah. And I think the discussion we've had from the city attorney is, can council by a subsequent ordinance then reorder the projects? What you've had in the meantime is the voters approve projects. But the ballot question that you had specifically says the project shall be completed in the order determined by this body, not the ballot. So I think that's where you have...
Well, and that's the question where you differ with the Attorney General and you differ with the South Carolina Department of Director of Revenue.
Legal counsel.
Well, I understand. Understand. But it's a disagreement that is bona fide. He happens to be here and they are not.
Anyway. Certainly, City Council has the right to tell Richard, we're only going to do these projects in the order that they appear on the ballot.
Well,
I mean, what do you do when the Indian Burial Ground shows up?
Capital Project Sales Tax law says that this council has the obligation to send a priority list of projects to be done to the voters for approval.
And
that's
you did
what
that.
It says.
You did
it doesn't
that.
Say that we can be changed by council. The law says submit it.
The ballot says, the ballot that the voters approve says council can modify the law.
I understand that, but the
that's
law,
why the language was put
but
in
the
there.
Law doesn't say the council can do that.
We've got a motion and a second. All in favor of this, show of hands, please. Okay. Passes unanimously. Okay, under new business. First reading of an ordinance to adopt the natural resources element amendment to the Aiken Comprehensive Land Use Plan. Mr. Pierce, please.
Mayor, thank you very much. The title of the ordinance is An Ordinance Amending the City of Aiken Comprehensive Land Use and Transportation Plan to Incorporate the Natural Resources Element for the Comprehensive Plan. You have the ordinance in the agenda packet. You also have a memorandum from Liz Stewart. It's not a very extensive cover memo, frankly. It does reflect that they have been reviewing this since 2009. They have worked on this element, and they are recommending the draft natural resources element that begins at page 70 of your agenda packet. Since we sent the agenda packet out last week, you should have an email from Elizabeth Darden and then another one from Dacre Stoker. They asked that that be included in the minutes. You had a copy at your place today. We've had several emails. In my cover memo, you'll see that I say that it doesn't include a separate entity for determining which spaces need to be preserved. I just want to explain for the record there's been some question about that. We certainly don't want any confusion. The point that I was trying to make in the cover memo is that the Planning Commission, as you will see on the last page of their document, and I'm trying to find out where that wound up in the agenda. That's on page 94 of the agenda. I just want the record to be complete so that my memo doesn't confuse anyone. It specifically says establish initial implementation task, authorize the Planning Commission to consult with individuals who possess the necessary expertise on an as-needed basis. Initial tasks to implement the natural resource element may include, but are not limited to, 1, a method for prioritizing rural lands and a method for prioritizing urban lands for protection of natural resources. 2, short and long-term action plans on preservation and or acquiring natural resources, including identifying areas to be acquired and funding strategies for acquisition while respecting private property rights. 3, methods of protection and selection, including but not limited to conservation easements, mitigation banking, transfer of development rights, donation and purchase. 4, plans for habitat management of publicly owned protected natural resources. And 5, research parcels, ownership, habitat / watershed value, etc. for Shaw's Creek watershed. What has been recommended to you from the Planning Commission authorizes the Planning Commission to consult. It does not set up a separate body to perform these tasks, but it does allow the Planning Commission to consult with individuals who possess the necessary expertise in these areas, as Planning Commission's version says, on an as-needed basis. It doesn't say who determines the as-needed basis. One other thing to bear in mind as Council discusses this item tonight, this is an amendment to your zoning amendment to the Comprehensive Land Use Transportation Plan. So it does take an ordinance to adopt. In the present posture, the Planning Commission is a recommending body only. Council determines if you want to amend the Comprehensive Land Use and Transportation Plan or if you want to amend the plan with modification of the recommendations of the Planning Commission, or if you just choose not to accept the recommendation at all. So that's your scope of review here tonight, and I just didn't want my memo to confuse anyone about what Council's business would be. So for Council consideration tonight is first reading of this ordinance to add this element to our Comprehensive Land Use and Transportation Plan.
Okay, thank you. We have a motion and a second for approval of this. Okay. You don't want to get it to a point where we can have discussion? I would make a motion to approve it with the understanding that we're trying to get to the level so that we can talk about this. Otherwise, it's a dead issue. We're not doing anything.
Do we need to, do you need to say suspend the rules so it can be discussed by all the citizens that are here waiting for that?
That's fine, too.
I think we should hear from the citizens there.
Oh, I do, too, definitely. That's what I was saying.
Mr. Mayor, I move we suspend the rules for council discussion and public input.
Okay.
Okay.
Show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay. Passes unanimously. Okay. Our citizens, who would like to be first? We'll go down this way and up and around, if that's okay. Yes, sir. Just give us your name, if you would, please. And if we can, I don't know how many want to speak. I assume there are quite a few. If you can try to keep it in the 5 to 6, 7 minute range, I'd appreciate it.
So you bet. Good evening, Council. Mr. Mayor, Council, Mr. Pierce, Mr. Smith. I really want to come back to...
Your name, please.
Mike Steak. I'm sorry. Thank you, Mr. DeWolf. I want to come back to a meeting that we had last summer. And what we had talked about was identifying things that stop us from being self-determinant. And as far as this land thing goes, you're saying here, prioritizing rural and urban lands which need natural resources protected, identifying specific properties that need to be purchased, conservation easement development, habitat management, Shaw's Creek watershed protection. All these things are awesome things from the outstart. But what I want to talk about is the Planning Commission voted unanimously to recommend City Council adopt this element to be added to the Comprehensive Land Use Plan. And I'm suggesting and urging that you don't adopt this. And I'm going to tell you why. Is because I believe that this is just a continuation, whether you know it or do not know it, of the United Nations Agenda for the 21st Century, or Agenda 21. So just briefly, for the people who have not heard this, for those who are unaware, Agenda 21, short for the United Nations Agenda for 21st Century, is a roadmap of guidelines and procedures dictated from the United Nations and implemented by the member states. In the case of the United States, the plans are implemented at the state and local level when federal support is not adequate to meet the demands set forth by the United Nations and its affiliate NGOs, as Democrats Against Agenda 21 state on their website. In a nutshell, the plan calls for governments to take control of all land use and not leave any of the decision-making in the hands of private property owners. It is assumed that people are not good stewards of their land and the government will do a better job if they are in control. Individual rights in general are to give away to the needs of communities as determined by the governing body. Moreover, people should be rounded up off the land and packed into human settlements or islands of human habitation close to employment centers and transportation. Another program called the Wildlands Project spells out how most of the land is to be set aside for non-humans. And we talked about this earlier, and I actually went out and found the map, and you're going to really be shocked on this idea that we continue to manage and move and nudge. And private property for the United States is unlike anywhere in the world. We as citizens have the right to own private property.
Absolutely.
And I do not believe, as a 10th Amendment individual, I do not believe that government should control any of our lands. So what I did is I went out and saw this map, and I printed it out. And what this says is simulated reserve and corridor system to protect biodiversity as mandated by the Convention on Biological Diversity, the Wildlands Project, UN and U.S. Man and Biosphere Program, and various UN, U.S. Heritage Programs, and NAFTA. The mapping for the area east of the Mississippi and south of the Ohio Rivers is at various stages of completion. Now, I have to caution you, this map has not been updated in quite a while. But what I'm going to show you is that the red is entirely for core reserves, which you're talking about. You're talking about carving out sections for land use, management, that type of thing. Mm-hmm. So the red is core reserves and corridors for little to no human use. The yellow is buffer zones, highly regulated use. Mm-hmm. The blue is normal use zones of cooperation.
Excuse me a minute. Stuart, could we put this on the screen?
And what's really telling or shocking is you have to pay attention to the red and the yellow. The red and the yellow are, remember, are little to no human use or highly regulated use. And that's what you're talking about when you adopt this for the land use. You're talking about highly regulated use. And while he's working on that, I'm going to keep moving on. The definition seems to fit the resolution. In 2012, South Carolina, the state Congress titled a thing called Commercial Center Retrofit Act, or H3604. It's almost a direct translation of the mission of Agenda 21. It was introduced in the 11-12 session. It died in committee in April of 2012, to my best research. It also bears noting that the South Carolina Council of Governments is an unelected body made up of regional, local governments. Each sub-council within the larger council is made up of a grouping of local governments belonging to a specific region of the state. This body is not accountable to the people of South Carolina. And yet, they're clearly involved in making very important decisions. I go on to upstate South Carolina. Taxation without representation. Imagine, if you will, a large organization funded by your tax dollars, though not by your permission. Now imagine that same organization creates a vast slew of onerous rules and regulation it seeks to impose upon you. It consists of unelected, unaccountable bureaucrats. Imagine how local citizens would react if, say, they became aware that their mayor and local town council were imposing these regulations on taxpayers. How should we react at the UN blueprints being put into action under our very noses by local and national politicians who are supposed to be servants of the people, acting as if they served masters thousands of miles away? I will go on. So my suggestion is, don't vote for this. It continues to put more control in the hands of government, where private property owners, let's take for example where I came from in Colorado, Wyoming, Utah, Nevada, through the federal government, they have locked up millions upon millions of acres of land that I as an individual could have purchased and taken to mine the natural resources, whether it's silver, gold, copper, oil, natural gas, and I could have turned it into a very nice livelihood. But millions and millions of acres are locked up through the federal program and also through state programs, just like this one. That is my concern, is that it continues to take away the property rights of South Carolinians, and specifically in this case, takes away the property rights of Aikenites. So I would urge this council, err on the side of caution, and how about the virtue of doing nothing?
Let me ask a question. Where does it say that the council or the government's going to take away these property rights once this is, if this is approved?
Well, it is not specific, and as I was listening through all the budget about water, it is not specific. And that's what bothers me, because it can be tweaked or adjusted so that we don't have a say anymore because you already voted on it and imposed it upon us.
I think it is in here, and I don't have the page right now or so. I think it's is specific.
Well, I don't.
That's what
I just don't believe
that. That's what
we've
been talking about for months and probably a couple of years now, certainly, that it should be specific, that the homeowner has got to agree to this. We're not talking about something that folks are going to go out there and take. The person that owns the land. Okay, private. He owns the land.
Okay, well, and
then does she have a right to say what they want to do with their land? I mean, you're talking about rights. I mean, the person owns the land, and he or she has the right to determine whether they want to say, yeah, I want to put it in a conservation easement or whatever. Anything wrong with that?
Mr. Mayor, absolutely not. And I'm going to tell you two stories, and they're going to be two quick stories. And we have done things like that on a private, in a private way. In Colorado, I lived in Denver, and I have been part of a personal land deal with Jack Vickers, who owns the International Club there in Colorado. And CBS was having such an issue with, they wanted to put maximum density along the fairways. Well, when you bring Tiger Woods and everybody else down that fairway, you don't want to see houses, you want to see sweeping vistas of trees and mountains. So Jack Vickers had an issue. So instead of having a body or a governing body in that county say, we're going to cordon this off, they came to us, the land developer, and they said, how can we make this right? So what we did is we bought all the land from him, we deeded back what he needed on the fairways to keep his deal with CBS. But the deal was is that we also had the opportunity within that deal to develop the rest of that land. We did that as private citizens. We didn't need a county or a state to let us do that. You're absolutely right. And my second one, my second thing is that in Colorado, when they were building the Colorado Rocky Stadium, it was a warehouse blighted area. And they tore down all of the buildings because they were blighted and they were ugly. So Colorado Rockies come in and they want to build the stadium. And the man who owned Home Plate said, I don't want to sell. And they said, I think you will sell. He says, but I don't want to. Everything else had been purchased around everything but Home Plate. He said, I'm not selling. And you know what they did to him? Eminent domain. And they took it from him. Those are two stories, one to the positive because private people can make things happen. The other one's a negative story of what can be done to you with your private property, eminent domain. So, and I guess we're not going to, I'm going to show this right here because it's,
okay.
Yeah, pass it around.
What you're looking at is the red and the yellow is little or no human use. The yellow is highly regulated. And the blue, which is very sparse in that map, is cooperation zones. And the cooperation zones basically mean, as long as you deal with the rules, you can cooperate with us. And there's no sovereignty in this idea. And I am for an individual sovereignty.
Since you're referring to this, to this document, sir, can we just leave that with the clerk, file it in for the record?
Sure. That's just fine. That's mine.
We just need one.
I'm sorry?
We just need one.
Okay.
You got to comply with the contract.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you, Mr. DeWine. Thank you, counsel.
Thanks.
Thank you. Who would like to be next? Yes, sir.
My name is Jimmy Frankley. And all I can say is y'all, because that covers everybody in here. The first thing, Mayor Kavanaugh, what you were saying is fine. Then why even have it? Why even vote for it if this paper doesn't do anything? The spirit of this document is to encourage voluntary preservation and protection of natural resources while maintaining integrity of private property ownership. Okay, then what is this thing? I mean, I'm just saying, all of this, we're already doing it. Again, I'll say what I said at the planning zone. This is a great town. This is a great town because of the people in Aiken. When you go and talk about things that have been preserved, Whitney Field, Hope Gardens, you just name it, what has been done, the people decided they wanted it done. It was no government entity that decided it. It was the people of Aiken that decided. In the end, we decide. And this is what we have had. We've got a great town. Okay? We don't need rules and government people to tell us it's a great town. We've already done it. We know how it works. Another thing here. For the purpose of this element, natural resource, which was changed from open, but it had open space. Okay, again, I'm a country boy. An open space is where I can throw a rock and not hit a tree. Okay? That's an open space. And again, that's what was voted on by the people. There were three elements they voted on: parks, hiking or walking tracks, and open element. And there were open spaces. Okay? Open spaces was defined as an undefinable term. How do you define something that's undefinable? How do you buy something that's not defined? If I say, you got this money to buy a dog, you can buy a dog, but you can't buy something that's not defined. So, you know, that is in there. It was changed from that open space to, the language was changed to natural resource element. That's not what it started off with. It has taken 10 years to get this far. Does that tell you about something that stinks? Everybody's passed it down for 10 years. So in other words, don't vote on it. You don't need it. It's taken care of. People that try to divide things for people in this town, we don't need another committee to go sit in front of and waste our time to do something in Aiken now will sometimes take you 1 year. Small people cannot wait. Again, people decided they didn't want sounds on the south side. Okay, was it a government entity or anybody that said it wasn't going to go? No, the people said, we don't want it. So, it didn't go. It's not there. The hotel's on across the street. They had to do everything, bumper, and then it finally went through. But if the people don't want it, you don't need a committee of, what worries me, are people that understand and live this, that see what the land is to be used for. Okay, all I'm saying is, if it is for, like for example, I finally found out the term what open space was when I went to Montmorency and I saw how they cleared the whole thing for horses. That's open space now. So it has open space. So that's the findings. So again, I am another one that's encouraged. Do not vote for this. Because what he's referring to, I don't go that far, but I have learned. Government is like a rat. If he can get his nose in there, he's in. All you do is you open this up for later on for another committee to fall in there, so we're using this. So again, I encourage you, please don't vote for this. We don't need another committee. This town is committee to death. Thank you.
Thank you. Next.
While Ms. Stoker's coming up, Mayor, I failed to mention in my initial remarks that she had also sent us an email at 8:32 this morning, and I think Council already has that. I think we put a copy at your place as well.
Got it. Jenny Stoker, Kershaw Street, and I've sort of been blown away by the last two speakers and am now a little bit confused myself about what we're doing here. But I think I know, and I think y'all know, because I think y'all have read this document enough to know that these gentlemen's concerns are, you know, have nothing to do with this document. Y'all are the government that they're speaking so badly about, so I hope you don't get your feelings hurt. And, you know, because I think, you know, a lot of people have done a lot of good stuff over 10 years to come up with this document, and I believe we do need an open space or natural resources element. There are a couple of things that I'd like to speak about, though. I'm going to make the assumption that we do need it and that I'm going to ask y'all please to vote for some form of this moving forward. My main concern, as you know from my email, is the fact that the Planning Commission's recommendation is that there not be a committee, a standing committee, that there be just people that they might ask questions about issues that come up. I prefer, and I think that people who voted years ago to designate funds for open space counted on the fact that there was going to be a process that they would know how the money was going to be spent, what it would be spent for, and I think an advisory board is a key component of that. I don't want to come down here every time you have a meeting and see who's advising you to do what with your money. I'd like to know who the people are and what their expertise is, and then I won't have to worry about it anymore. I think we do need to protect additional open space to keep up with the growth in the city, and I think that most of y'all from your previous comments agree with that. There is a specific on page 12 a specific thing that I brought up to the Planning Commission, and I'm not sure it was actually Dacre who was unable to come to a Planning Commission meeting and asked me to ask this, and he, unable to come tonight, wanted to know if this is the intent on page 12 under equestrian lands.
That's page 85 of the agenda packet.
Okay.
85, you're 12.
85.
Yes.
Okay, under 4.2 vision, in the, not the, in the second paragraph, it says in part that the Horse Hitchcock Woods Planning District's polo fields, event sites, and tracks are protected and economically successful breeding and training farms and commercial stables. I think one of the original concerns is that not all of those spaces are protected, and they need to be protected, and that's one of the uses of the Open Space Fund and this document, I think, to help preserve and protect those spaces that want to be protected. Not that they're going to be protected if they want to be, but... So is that... I think Ed's here, and they may have discussed that wording after the Planning Commission meeting, and maybe there's a reason that it's left like that, but if it's an oversight, maybe we should look at that.
Well, no, that's not correct.
We don't think it is correct anyway. I think that's why we're here.
Mr. So, Evans is here. He can address
okay.
that. Yeah, sure.
And I think that, you know, as I said in my email, I would recommend that you go back to the implementation page 21 in the packet from an earlier version that, asked for
just a second.
It takes us,
Mayor, I think that's page 94.
94, yes.
Yeah, and numbers are different. That's why it takes.
I'm sorry. I try to bring mine from home. So.
No problem. You saved paper that
saving
way.
Saving the paper, although I've got 94. A stack of all the different versions, and it gets kind of confusing. But on page 21, the implementation, in an earlier version, when they asked for a natural resources committee to be established, I think that I would certainly recommend that we establish a committee, although, and if somebody doesn't want to come to the meetings, they don't have to, for sure. But I think that the natural resources committee would be more appropriately recommending to City Council instead of Planning Commission, and I think that these eight items that are listed under there would be appropriate items for them to contribute. Right, but in this earlier version,
okay. Do you want me to pass that around?
Yeah, you can even tear it off.
Yeah, that's all right.
And this is from. This is a Planning Commission memorandum, the document from November 6, 2013.
Can we make that a part of the record, just have the clerk keep it?
Yes.
For the record?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I bet you do. I bet you already have it. It's just a matter of...
It's an older version of it.
Older version. So that's what I would think we could... If we could reinsert that, and however else we need to change wording to reflect the fact that it has been reinserted, and have the committee recommend to City Council rather than Planning Commission, I think we'd be in a lot better place.
Jenny, let me ask you a question. This is something I've been thinking about over and over again and saying, why not this, why not that? If it would be decided, first of all, pass this in any way, but to have a committee, what would be wrong with that committee reporting to the Planning Commission? Because the Planning Commission then reports to us, and we have the last word anyway.
Well,
rather than, it is, after all, it is a Planning Commission. We have a Planning Commission. So to me, this is planning.
But my feeling about that is, so many times things that come to the Planning Commission get watered down and filtered to the point that you don't actually receive the information that I feel like you should receive.
Well, you don't think these folks that you're talking about, very talented, educated, whatever you want to say, people that know the all of the ins and outs, you don't think that they are not going to say something if that were to happen?
Well, if you look around the room, I see that most of them, over time, have gotten exhausted by this process and have just said, you know what, I'm not going tonight because I've said this 1,000 times and nobody's listening to me. So why would they, why would they take to come here and tell you one more time?
Obviously, some things take longer than others. If it's a good thing,
and I apologize for my lack of patience.
No problem. But if we still didn't want to listen, now I'm speaking for myself and trying to understand exactly what I think would be the right thing to do. Then. We wouldn't be talking about it even, because we have been working a long time. Now, that's another way of looking at it, certainly. You can say, well, it's taking too long, I'm not going to be involved anymore. But if you really want to get to the point and make a change and do what you think is the right thing, you keep churning, don't you?
I am.
You keep going, and that's why you're here.
Yeah.
And others, too. So I don't believe that any of those folks that would be a part of that committee, and I suspect that many of us could name most of them, would hesitate to, if they go to planning with a suggestion, and then we get something else from planning, everybody's going to know about it.
However, those people who we're all thinking of, who are on the task force and who would likely be asked to be on this committee, they're the ones that have said they think the committee should be under City Council, not Planning Commission. And for the reasons that I've just stated, and then if you go back through the minutes, you'll see many of those reasons that they've stated, and much more.
I just brought this up because I could see how people can certainly see both sides of that.
Sure.
I don't think it's that important myself, because I think these people are going to be doing a great job. And they're going to, I don't see the Planning Commission saying, no, we're not going to do this, we're going to do something else. And when we've got all the citizens that go to the Planning Commission anyway, and most of them are always involved in these issues when it comes up. So, that's just another view.
I've been to many of the Planning Commission meetings when they've discussed this, and the learning curve for them to understand these eight or however many of those issues are, the learning curve for them, they're not conservationists. Y'all are not conservationists, but you're the final buck on this. And what I've seen in the Planning Commission is with the learning curve for them to figure out all these conservation techniques and best ways to do these things, a lot's going to get lost in the translation.
I didn't think that was part of their task to get involved in that detail, but that's why we have this group. Now, maybe I've missed something along the way.
If they're going to report...
The committee we're talking about.
Right, so if they're going to work with Planning Commission, isn't Planning Commission going to need to understand... Or aren't they going to be discussing possible...
Well, certainly to a view, they're going to have some knowledge. I suspect most of them would dig into it and they would have some knowledge. Not an expert knowledge, like some of the folks we could name.
Right, which is why they need that committee, and which is why I think y'all need that committee.
They would be on the committee. It just that other approach. The same people would be on the committee. They would just report to the Planning Commission, so to speak, rather than the city developing another committee.
Let me make a couple of comments.
Yeah, I'll give up on that.
I pretend to this as well, and originally I was in favor of an open space committee until I had to decide who the heck I would appoint on it. This is kind of a specialized thing, and I would point out that all of us come from the community. Some of us decide to run for office. Some of us decide to accept appointments to a planning commission or whatever board we have. It's caused dissension, whether that's right or not. There are people in the private sector who fear this document and fear what it will do to the property that they own. Now, that is a fact, and you can agree that they should or should not, but they do. Since I've been on council, we've talked that I recall, there may be more, but I recall two cases where we dealt with open space, one which we rejected and one which we approved. We rejected a suggestion that we buy a lot on Pine Log Road using open space money. We didn't do that. This three, I'm sorry. And the second one is we recently purchased a piece of land from the Green Boundary Club. And immediately put that land into a system where nothing can ever happen to it. It is what it is and can never change. And I'm not sure whether we use open space land for Peggy's Pond. We gave that to the discretion of the city manager. I don't remember how we did that. But the last meeting of the Planning Commission, Dr. Sheely got up and explained that he would be one of several people, and I think most folks would agree, that could qualify as an expert land planner, and that what we ought to do is just let this committee function as the equine committee. I don't know if anybody on council owns horses. I certainly don't. I don't think any of us do. But if we've got an issue in the equine industry, we have an equine committee, and they can meet, and they can tell us, and we'll put great credibility in what they say. And the same would be, and you may be one of the experts, the land management experts, that we would ask to help guide us through that process. But in the two cases where we had to deal with open spaces, or three, depending on my memory, we didn't need any guidance. I mean, we purchased the land at Green Boundary, which was a little contentious. I mean, there were some that agreed with it and some that didn't. But it seemed to meet the criteria. But what I can't come to terms with is the fear in the private sector within the city of Aiken that landowners are concerned that this document will enable the government to designate land that they own for another purpose so that if they try to sell it or they try to develop it, that they would be inhibited from doing so. Now, I guess if we could absolutely include protections to them that would be satisfactory to them, then we could probably pass it.
May I?
Yes.
Because
I know I gave you a bunch.
No, well, I mean, these same people don't want any government. They don't want to pay taxes. They don't want this and that. Does that mean you're going to cease to function? No. Because they're afraid of this document doesn't mean that what they're afraid of is in this document. And we all know that. So you can't use, I mean, to me, you can't use that for a valid reason not to have an open space plan.
But it's the same vein, Jenny. It doesn't mean that we don't respect open space if we don't have a document.
You do. But what we're all looking for is the assurance going forward that it's, you know, that the comprehensive plan is going to,
I hope we all do, because unlike the Planning Commission, we're held to a level of performance.
Right.
And if we don't do what we said we're going to do, then we may find a new job. I mean, that said, I wish more people would run for council. But
so, as far as the land that you've purchased so far with the Open Space Fund, I think that's, you know, obviously that's worked out well, and I would agree with the property that you bought. However, if you took the time to have a committee recommend, which they actually have already done, and you may or may not be aware of this, of a process by which a property would be valued a certain way because of its characteristics, its value of natural resources, its beauty, et cetera, so that then the voters who have voted on you and have voted on all this setting aside this open space money will know that that's how the money is going to be spent, and that each property or each easement or each use of those funds are going to be dealt with a consistent way across the board. It's not just going to be, this looks great, let's buy this. You know, not to say that that's what you've done, but if somebody's worried about government acting with, you know, with no control, they would, I think, appreciate knowing, you know, how you're going to consider each piece of property and each way that you're going to spend the money. And the only way that's going to happen is with a committee, and I think that your idea is right. That's the level of committee it needs to be. It doesn't need to be a commission, I think, might have been the original vision. I think we've all come to realize that that's not necessary.
Let me ask you a question. Don't we have enough protections already? I mean, we have the horse district that's got some restrictions on what people can do with it. Whether
neighborhood has got restrictions on what they can and can't do. But to say that the horse district is protected is, you know, the properties are protected, I think that's not a valid statement.
Well, I think it is, because we had a case about a year and a half or 2 years ago where somebody tried to divide some of his properties so to make it more marketable, and basically
and that's a zoning back. That's a zoning issue, though, and zoning, you know, zoning can be changed, fine, but there's some large tracts over there that could be divided into several smaller tracts. And if the property owner chose to change that voluntarily, I think that's something that would be of value to the city. So I don't think, you know, if you say we don't need this, that it is protected, I think that's a mistake. It doesn't have the level of protection that it could have.
Jenny, the executive summary says right off the bat, and you know it by heart probably.
No, I doubt it.
The spirit of this document is to encourage voluntary preservation and protection of natural resources while maintaining the integrity of private property. And then you turn another page on what we have, and it says the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not like it's saying opposite. It's not like not saying anything about that.
Right.
And
there's no.
I don't see how people can say that.
Well, I don't think that they understand the document. So I think the fact that they don't understand the document is not a reason for it not to exist. I think, and if we had an open space or natural resources committee, hopefully they would do a better job than I'm doing in explaining this, and so that these people wouldn't be afraid of it, because nobody wants to take. You know, just take their land if they have it.
Well, the protection these people have now comes from this body.
Right.
Comes from home.
And apparently that's acceptable to them, or they would be taking action against this body. But in a way, you could almost say we are the open space committee for the city of Aiken. I don't know of any attempt on anybody's part to come and present us with a piece of land that we should buy with open space money. It isn't to say that it isn't in somebody's mind, but...
But if someone came to you and said, you know, what about buying my piece of land? And somebody else said, you know, oh, he's only doing that because, you know, his friend's on city council and he wants to sell his land. Well, if you had objective criteria already set up for what was important for you to spend this money on, it would take away any question about your, you know, not that I certainly have any questions of your motives, but if someone had questions of your motives on a particular piece of land.
Well, are you intimating the people on a committee wouldn't have any friends?
Probably wouldn't. They'd probably be scared to go out tonight. What are you talking about? Anyway, you know what I think? I'm sorry that people are so confused by this that they think that that anybody wants to take their rights away because
I don't think it's an element of confusion, Jenny, in all due respect. I think, you can't appreciate the concerns of a business owner until you own the business, and you can't appreciate the concerns of a landowner until you own land. And so I think that's an awesome responsibility that they have, and it's just, I mean, if they're concerned, I'm concerned.
Right.
But, it doesn't mean I have no regard for open space.
But could you possibly explain this to them so that they would no longer fear it?
They've been with you every step along the way.
But we're kind of, in the same language.
Well, I can remember a sitting member of this body telling us that it's a great plan if you'll make these umpteen changes at one point in time. So it's been, they have concerns about this document from day one by various members of Aiken, and have been pro and con. So we do the best we can, but you might not always agree. As I said, my concern is I don't know if we ever had that open space committee. I don't know who I'd find to put on it, because it's a challenge, and I'd rather trust us to handle it properly.
I think we just have to, we don't always agree on these things, but you either trust something that's in writing and even make it as legal as you can make it. But some people are never going to trust that either. I mean,
right.
People say, well, there's some way around it. There's got to be some way around it. So I don't know. You talk about it, and you talk about it, and talk about it, and finally you come to a vote, or you don't even vote. My big hang-up is what I mentioned earlier. Does this group that you're going to have report directly to council? But why not report to planning commission?
Why not work with both of you? Why not, as the issues come up, why not have them available?
Well, we'd end up doing that because the planning has their rules and policies and what have you that we'd have to abide by some of those. And then we'd be talking to this group about other things. And that's why I say, why don't they go through the planning commission? It is a planning commission. And I think we could get the same point they want to do. But that's a matter of, that's a matter of
That's one little piece.
Opinion, yeah.
But I think I would like to know, perhaps, from Mr. Evans about the word protected.
Sure.
Right behind you.
Thank you, Ed.
The only way to answer that is that's the wording that the Planning Commission adopted or recommended. And it says that it is protected and economically successful. And if you disagree with that determination, you can change the wording, but that's the conclusion we arrived at.
Ed, what page are you on? I'm sorry.
Page 12, page 85 of the agenda.
Okay, thank you.
Well, I got one question, Jenny. Okay, this plan's been worked on for 10 years and so forth. But how, in fact, would the last 10 years have changed if this was adopted 10 years ago? I mean, what would have been different than what it is today?
Well, I think, one, as I said, if there had been criteria developed, we would know how you were going to spend your open space money. I think that would be helpful. If there was a committee, originally it was envisioned that this committee or commission would be involved in programs that would educate people on the value of open space and the ways to conserve open space. That might help with some of these fears that people have. I think they may, perhaps an open space committee could help explain this document better than I can. I think also, if you have a person who has a piece of land and they want to conserve it, and they want to work with the city's open space fund to do so, but they're not aware of what mechanisms are available. Y'all are not aware of what mechanisms are available for conservation or matching funds or whatever. If you had this group, this committee, they could act as a, you know, as a mediator or as a, you know, sit in and help the city and the landowner get to a win-win situation for preserving their land. As it is, the only, you know, you have the land trust, but they're not, you know, who's local, but the Land Conservancy, but they're not the only way to, you know, to conserve land. There are many other bodies that we're not aware of. So anyway, you know how I feel. I would be sorely disappointed if this is dropped after, you know, 10 years of work by many, many people. So, sorely disappointed.
Thank you, Jenny. Yes, sir.
I'm Ed Giovi, and I live at 541 Grace Avenue, southeast in Aiken. Now, I don't know about the rest of you, but I haven't seen any blue-helmeted United Nations troops on Lawrence Avenue here recently. And after what you said, I fully expect that the next Planning Commission meeting that a bunch of Russians will probably come and arrest everybody on the Planning Commission and take them up to Fort Jackson and interim them. Now, that's utter, complete nonsense. This discussion should not be framed in some sort of extremist ideological political decision. It's not. Let's use a little common sense and good judgment, which this town has done over and over again, year in, year out. Let's use a little common sense. If this is so offensive to so many people, throw it in the ash can. Start with the Planning Commission. I served on the Planning Commission. We did a great deal of work and were very thoughtful. And I think it can be an instrument to achieve what a lot of people would like to achieve, which is to construct a plan as part of the planning process where people can come to the Planning Commission, ask for specific projects or plans for whatever, let the Planning Commission act, make the recommendations to you folks who make the final decision. There is nothing that has been discussed. I was on the Planning Commission. What the mayor has already told you, there is nothing forcing you to sell your property. It is a process between a willing buyer and a willing seller. The United Nations is not going to come and take your house. Now, you ought to get that out of your head. If that you believe that, then you ought to be up there in Columbia asking the governor to nationalize the National Guard to come down and put a ring around your house. So let's just put it off to the side and stop that nonsense. Now, I think if we listened to these guys, we would not have the Redwoods National Park, because that man in Colorado wanted to develop every inch of property, and he chopped down every redwood out there, and he'd be using it to build patio furniture.
Ed, let's criticize
our folks. I am personally disgusted by the level of this discussion. I want you to know that. And I think most sensible people would be outraged to listen to this nonsense. So what I'm asking everybody on this council to use good judgment and common sense, and if this is not an appropriate document and you cannot approve it, then I would certainly suggest that you go to the Planning Commission. Let the Planning Commission do their work, instruct them to carry out what their mission is, which is planning. Now, if we want to get rid of zoning, we want to get rid of the historic designations, that can talk about government intrusion. Boy, that sounds like government intrusion to me. If you're in the historic district, you can't change the exterior of your house without permission. Has that been a good thing? I live in the historic district, and I welcome it. And I think everybody who lives there welcomes it. So what I'm asking you to do is, if this document is not acceptable, then forget about it. Work with the Planning Commission. Ask them to carry on what their mission is. Ask people who have a concern about open space to come before the Planning Commission, make recommendations, let the Planning Commission act,
Let them make their recommendations to you, and you will make the final decision.
Okay, let me ask you, please. Who do you think this so-called group should report to, so to speak?
Now, I'm
to
sorry,
us, another committee?
What group are you talking to?
I'm talking about the experts that we hope to get on this, on what we're talking about as a committee. Yes.
Well, again, there seems to be a tremendous opposition to even having a committee. Oh. Now, what is wrong with the Planning Commission asking for advice?
I don't understand that people don't want a committee. I think most anybody that thinks about this thing wants the most experts they can get helping out on this. But the question we're having, or maybe I've missed the whole thing, you have these experts, Harry Shealy plus whoever else, and who are they going to report to? Now, you've got two ways to go. They can go to the Planning Commission that we've just spent 30 minutes talking about, or they can come to the City Council as another committee, like you've chaired. Only yours was the Planning Committee, I recognize it. But I'm just asking you, what's your thought on that?
I think that a committee of so-called interested people, whether you call them experts or informed people.
Absolutely.
Well, look, I mean, if you've got a brain tumor, do you want to hire a brain surgeon?
No, Ed, you're getting off this, my point.
All right. Well,
we've already agreed. Let's say we already agree that you need this group of experts. We know that. I think everybody knows this. If this were to go through, whatever way it does, then you need those learned folks. We're not saying that the Planning Commission, as it is now, is going to make these decisions. This group, however, would work with the Planning Commission, and planning comes to us like they always have with things, as opposed to setting up an entirely new seven-member committee or commission, or whatever you want to call it, that reports directly to council. Now, you got two choices.
I would agree with you 100%, Fred. I think that that creating another committee reporting directly to you apparently is not what a lot of people want. Perhaps an advisory committee to the Planning Commission might be a better alternative. All I think that we need to do is to have some significant, intelligent, reasoned input. Look,
I don't think anybody disagrees with that.
People in California are suffering from a huge water drought because people in Southern California have taken steps over the years to provide water. They are 85% sufficient in water. Northern California didn't do what was necessary, and they are now suffering a tremendous water shortage.
Yeah.
You've just had this enormous discussion on water rates and all sorts of things about water. We need to do things to protect the future of the city of Aiken. It means protecting our water resources. If it means protecting some of our other resources, then that's fine. But if the objection is to creating a committee that somehow, some way, people think that this is going to force people to do things, well, then fine. Let's not create another committee. Let's have an advisory committee.
Well,
let me ask you the same question. I asked Jenny Stoker. For the last 10 years or so, what would have been different if this committee was in existence 10 years ago? Where did the council go wrong? Did we make the wrong, or not we, but did the council make any bad decisions predicated on not having a committee making a recommendation?
All I can tell you is my experience on the Planning Commission, I was on it for a good long time, was that we had many discussions on various aspects related directly, indirectly to open space or keeping areas that we thought were important, and it was part of the natural planning process, which we then made recommendations to the City Council, and you chose to either act or not act. Now, whether you're asking me whether what significant difference that would have made if we'd had a committee, significance perhaps would have been that it would have been a more formalized process, that we would have identified perhaps more individual areas or pieces of property, but we had many, many, many discussions, much of it centering on the historic district, the importance of areas in the historic district, specific areas, sure, which directly would relate to perhaps even what we're discussing this evening. And it worked quite well.
and there's no reason why this can't work. But we need to come together as a community and put aside the arguments concerning people being forced to give up land. There's nothing in here concerning eminent domain, nothing that says, and I think it's clearly stated in here, that it should be voluntary. But again, if you don't like it, get rid of it. Go back to the Planning Commission and say, okay, keep on doing the good work that you're doing and talk about various things that you need to do in terms of whatever you want to call it, open space planning, water, shed conservation, whatever. And if you need advice, you need help from people who you think are qualified and informed, bring them in. Let them give you some advice. Then they can act on it. They can make recommendations to you. But we need to get off this confrontation of ideological confrontation. That'll get us nowhere. Let's get together and do what's best for the city of Akron.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Ed. Next.
Bill Tucker.
Yes, sir.
Bill Tucker, I live on Pin Oak Drive, and I want to start by thanking all of you for your energy and passion for the city, because I couldn't do this every other Monday. I came here to talk about a specific tweaking of this. Did not have the global perspective of the first two speakers, but I had the concern that somewhere along the time since 2009, the standing committee, and now it sounds like, Mayor, you're talking about it as if it's there, but as I understand it, it's not currently in the draft that is presented to you tonight. It's now just an ad hoc planning commission consulting whoever they wish to consult as they need it, and right. not a regular committee. And I would submit to you that that's a dangerous thing to do.
Well, I don't agree with that either.
Okay,
we're on
the same wavelength, because I think it lacks transparency, it lacks accountability, it who knows who it would be, and it would vary. I think there needs to be a standing group identified and accountable who would be able to provide input. And to answer your question and Councilman Himoki's question, I would just as soon see it come directly to you. You may not, but the fact of the matter is that you're the ones that have the money. You control the purse strings, and it would just seem to me that it makes more sense to have that answerable directly to council and not be filtered through the Planning Commission. I share some of Jenny's concerns that not always have you gotten the straight scoop from what's gone on at the Planning Commission meeting. I've been involved in a few things where I felt like it did get filtered and distilled and was not always presented to you in quite the same way as it was when you were president of the Planning Commission. So I think the Planning Commission does a great job, but they are a quasi-judicial body. They do have to rule on zoning issues serve not only to assign but to alter zoning designations from time to time. I think it just makes a whole lot more sense. It's a lot cleaner organizationally to have the body answerable to the council directly. So I would ask that the draft be tweaked to reinstate some sort of standing body that would be an advisory body. You could call it whatever you want. I don't know how many people. You could have representatives from certain constituencies, such as the Land Conservancy. They could maybe have one standing member of that committee. So I think those kinds of things could be worked out. And it doesn't need to be an unwieldy group, but it does need to have the expertise that you're looking for as you identify and develop creative ways to acquire and to conserve these open spaces. And I should say, I'm not here on behalf of any organization that I'm a member of or has anything going on with council. This is just me as a private citizen, but I certainly would ask that you consider modifying the draft, because somewhere between 2009 and now, that has changed. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Bill.
Bill, before you sit down.
Yes, ma'am.
Can I ask you if that's your wife, Sandy?
It is my wife, Sandy.
Hadn't seen her in 20 years.
And she still looks
grateful.
The same,
she
doesn't she?
The same.
She's, just great, she's just grateful we had something to eat before we came. So.
We did.
She said she'd be all out.
We've been snacking.
You didn't bring any extra, did you?
Thank you.
I do have a little question. We had a couple of discussions with your group about some of the properties, the polo field and so forth.
Right.
How would the acceptance or incorporation of this plan have helped the discussion? Would it have brought it along sooner, or would it hinder it? Or
I don't know that it would have any particular impact. I mean, I think the timing is more driven by the fact that you now have some designated monies that you'd like to use to encourage the conservation of open space. So I think it's more that driven than it is any other factor. I can't think of there being any major difference between what it would be now 10 years ago.
Other than the equestrian feature goals that may or may not be met by the negotiation
right.
items.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks, Bob.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next. Anybody next?
If you look on page 86, Mr. Homoki, it does actually talk about work with the Whitney Trust to create a long-term strategy for the protection of the Whitney Polo Field and Powerhouse Polo Field. So that is a mentioned item
but
in
even,
the plan.
But even without the incorporation, it's already initiated.
Yeah, that's true. It is described. I thought to take
yeah,
your question.
Well, I understand that. That's not. But I mean, would you know, the conversation started prior to the incorporation of this, so it's, you know, I don't want to say it's superfluous, but basically, the natural order of things in the city has worked where we're actually discussing something.
Yeah, the discussion is underway, and it is actually mentioned in the draft plan.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
Mayor and Council, my name is Tad Barber, 334 Walker Avenue. I really wasn't going to get up until Mr. Tucker got up, so I will make a few points real quick. I agree with the earlier speakers about this document being voluntary, and if it's voluntary, then why do we even need a document like this? We already have this, which is part of the comprehensive plan now, so I think this is I wouldn't say it's extreme, but it's probably a little bit overdone in a modification to an existing document. There are already some protections in place. I think somebody made a comment about that. You've got overlay districts. You've got zoning, you've got development standards, you have deed restrictions. If somebody wants to protect their own property, they can put a deed restriction on it, keep somebody else from using it for some other use. And there are conservation easements, which are voluntary. If somebody so chooses, they can put a conservation easement. We as a city and as a government don't need to be in place to be telling people that that's what they need to do. If they want to do it, there are avenues that have been in place for years for them to be able to do that. I have an issue with the city particularly in buying up properties for conserving property, especially if it gets deeded in the city name. You're taking property off tax rolls. Number one, you're already having issues with revenue coming into the city and to some other entities that depend on tax revenue from properties. So I think you're looking at diminishing the tax base in the long run, which is something that we need to look at. So private groups should be the ones that are actually going out buying these properties, not the government. More government property or more property the government owns, I think you do get into an issue about who's controlling the properties and what happens to private property rights. So my recommendation, rather than have a separate committee and add a layer to the process, is to actually tighten up the Planning Commission and have qualified people on the Planning Commission. That's probably one of the more important commissions that we have, and it has zero requirements for anyone to serve on the Planning Commission. You have aviation experts on the Aviation Commission. You have other experts serving on other commissions. Why not have real estate people, have conservationists, botanists, whatever you want to have, make those requirements for the Planning Commission so you can have more of an expertise within the Planning Commission. They want to add some more expertise, then that's fine. They can recommend people come and speak to them and get some more advice. But I think the biggest issue is that we just don't have qualified people who know a lot about development and land planning and standards of development making decisions that will affect the community as a whole. So I think without going through a whole process of redoing an ordinance and creating a whole other layer of government approval process, I think we can just make our own planning commission more responsive and more of an expert in the items that they cover every week, every month. Thank you.
Any comments or questions?
Thank you.
Thank you, Ted.
Thanks.
Who would like to speak next? Okay. All right. Well, the issue is back to City Council. For discussion or passing on first round?
Need a motion and second.
I know. Do you want to expand the rules so that we can discuss it some, or do you want to?
We already did that, and we're through discussing it.
Okay, yeah.
It's a question of whether anybody wants to make a motion.
Or have time goes by and you forget. Okay, do we have a motion? Do we have a motion and second to approve? How long do we have to wait?
I make a motion that we continue it. I don't know whether anybody's ready to vote. It doesn't appear that way.
I would agree to that, to continue it. And perhaps we've got some different ideas or thoughts or need to look into a little bit more here before we obviously...
And I know everybody's exhausted. We've been here many times before, but we have to make sure that we are making the right decision. So,
right, do
I don't know whether anybody, any of us tonight are ready. I'm not.
Okay, you've got a motion. Do we have a second?
Oh, were you making the second? You
said I will, yes. Okay. I'll second it. Okay. Show of hands, please. All in favor?
Motion to continue.
The motion to continue? Okay.
Two.
Okay, against, opposed? All the others? Okay.
Four and four.
Okay.
Well, that fails.
All right. So. Are there any comments at all? Any other motions? Okay. Dead issue. All right. No action is taken.
Is it my understanding, Mr. Smith, that that would, in effect, the item just dies for lack of motion?
Correct.
Upon presentation.
Okay.
You know, before we go into the next item, Mayor, we've got several heroes in the audience today. Before everybody leaves, it'd be an opportunity for us to express appreciation to them. It's Philip Burnett, Ryan Butler, Roscoe Epps, Johnny Sprouse, Darren Perry, Spencer Rossow, and he was here early but had to leave, Charles Beans. These are the folks that are picking up your stuff, everybody. These are the debris removers.
Okay. We thank you so much. Would you like to say anything about how much fun it's been or anything like that?
I'll be afraid to.
They're probably here to find out when the city manager is going to show up with the next round of donuts and hot coffee, Mayor, quite frankly.
How many did you buy?
We've been there three times so far. We did not make this morning, but who knows what might happen Friday morning.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for your efforts to keep our city clean and better every day.
Well, come on, we'll go Friday morning.
And we know it's going to take a while to get everything cleared. And we know that we need to be patient. It's not a whole lot of it. But we thank you.
They're doing a great job. Stuart, could you turn around the poster board while we're while we're talking about it. This board, and we'll send out an electronic copy for everyone. That's fine, Stuart. Just put the board over.
I still have questions about that we were going to discuss later, but if you're going to go into it now.
Oh, I don't know. This shows the areas where we've completed first passes through the city of Aiken after week three. Week one was green, week two was the goldenrod, and week three was the burgundy color that you see on there. So that's what they've done in 3 weeks.
Okay. And what percent did you estimate? 17?
Tim, do we have a percentage? I didn't get a percentage from you. 30%?
30%. 30%. Great.
Stuart, we can slide that back. So.
I think we all also want to thank our staff for the work they've done. It hadn't been any particular one group. It's been everybody working together, and what you've done. And thank you so much for that. Appreciate it. And as I understand, no major injuries. Is that correct, Tim? Nothing. Some scratches maybe, but.
Definitely scratches, Mayor.
Yeah.
Okay. Sore backs.
A couple of them had to suffer the city manager riding along, and he's in the middle of everything.
Yeah. Unbelievable. Yeah, that's probably worst case.
Unbelievable. Yeah.
Well, that's good on the safety aspect, certainly.
It's absolutely amazing.
Philip, did you have something you wanted to say?
I was simply going to. Isn't the schedule for future cleanup on the website?
It is. We actually made a huge mistake, and I'll just admit that to council. We got too specific with streets and days, and unfortunately, you know, until we get on the piles, it's hard to know.
Yeah, until you get
And
that.
So what we're looking at, and if you go there now, you're going to see subdivisions where we're working, and we're going to discuss this at staff tomorrow, but what we're going to try and do is talk about areas within the subdivision. And I know I've had a couple of council members call with specific safety concerns, and we've tried to address those. And unfortunately, a careless someone set one of the piles on fire on Lundy Street. So even though that's not on the schedule, believe me, we're going to go put the fire out and take care of that and clean that up. We don't want safety issues. And that's something we want to be sensitive to. So just for everybody's help, what's on the list is our plan of where we want to work in the coming week, and that will be updated fairly regularly, several times a week.
But you're talking about subdivisions as opposed to locations.
Yes, sir. It just didn't work, Mr. Dwyer. It's a humble goal, and we'd like to get a street done, but until we're on it, it's hard to know how long it's going to take. You know, some streets go very quickly, particularly when we got in Woodside. We spent an entire week on one street and got most of it done. So some of it's very slow, some of it's very quick. And again, this is a first pass, so it's our largest piles of debris.
Absolutely.
I was going to discuss it later, but I guess we're all into it now. If we're into 3 weeks with 30%, the extrapolating of that is that we're talking another 7 weeks.
Probably so,
yes, sir. And we talked about a 2 to 3 month time span. At one point, Mr. Coakley hoped it'd be a month. At another point, we hoped we'd have at least the first pass done before Masters Week. And again, we've had some great help from outside cities. We've had some unfortunate sewer issues we had to take care of and had to pull some departments off. Other departments have stepped up. So we're getting better at it. That's an average of 10% a week. So you're looking at 10 weeks just for the first pass.
I would suggest then that we make safety a primary focus of where we pick up, because there are many streets throughout the city that are really not streets. It's just going zigzag from one pile around to another. And a great concern that some people have expressed to me is, how could an ambulance get in here and how could a fire truck get in here? So we need to focus on those areas, wherever they are, that pose a traffic and safety hazard to the neighborhoods. And some neighborhoods are more congested than others. I gave you one today with Toome.
Sure. And you remember driving up Evans Road, how bad that was?
Yes.
And we did address that.
The problem with Evans is part of its city and part of its county.
Exactly. And we are in constant contact with our friends at the county. The
county's doing a wonderful job. I'm hearing good comments about their work at Gem Lakes and Cedar Creek now. How many crews do we actually have picking up trucks?
Dick, could we get back to the agenda and then we're going to talk about
that? I'd be more than
happy
to, Mr. Mayor. That's what I had asked before, and the rest of the council get into a discussion. I'd be more than happy to defer. Thank you.
Okay. Item 2 under new business, accommodations tax committee recommendations for accommodation tax funds. Mr. Pierce, please.
Mayor, thank you very much. It's time for our annual review of the recommendations from your accommodations tax committee for the disbursement of funds. We're in a continuing conversation with folks that represent South Carolina Department of Revenue and our accommodations tax payments. The Finance Department carefully reviewed the funds that we had on hand pursuant to the state statute, and the figure is $130,000. Unfortunately, we had $259,067.71 in requests. And Counselor will recall last year we took a good hard look at the application process and an opportunity for the committee to engage in ranking of requests to, in an effort to make the distributions as fair as possible. In my memo and in the memo that you've received from the committee chair, Peggy Penland, you'll see the requested amounts from the various groups who appeared, and then the award that the committee has made. And for council's consideration tonight is approval of the disbursements that the accommodations tax committee has recommended. And let's see, Peggy Penland, the chair, is here. You're behind somebody. Hey, Peggy. She's here, and I know she's ready to answer any questions that council may have. She's taking her head down.
I don't think she is.
Where's Peggy?
She's careful. Right. There she is, Peggy.
Do you have any questions?
They may by the time you get here.
Yeah. And, on Peggy's behalf, there are complete minutes that you'll find start at page 98, and then it goes into some detail about the specific requests. I was just looking at that. Bear with me.
Also,
that starts at page 106, Mayor.
Correct. Peggy's presentation, there may be someone here that wants to speak about it, you know, or so. So.
We know that everybody is not happy.
Huh?
We know that everyone is not happy.
That's usually the case.
But we have about 50% of the funding that was requested. And as you know, we have a new program. We're spending a lot more time on this. And we have been very, very specific about the surveys that each body needs to provide. And so there were some members of my committee who were very stringent about this. And that is why you see the results that you do. We go by the results of the surveys as to the number of, as we call, heads on beds. And there were certain groups, including the Aiken Polo Club and the Trials, and the Fall Steeplechase, who took our recommendations and really did a great job with them. And they were rewarded for their efforts. So if you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer them. Otherwise, we can move on with the meeting.
Oh, Mr. Mayor, I move that we accept this.
I had a question for Peggy.
Sure.
Peggy, what could Juneteenth do? Ms. Sanders is here. Do to increase their allocations.
All right, Juneteenth is a new event, and they do not have the heads on beds that they need. But because of the fact that they changed their event to a two-day event and a jazz festival, they were awarded, it was actually a very high percentage of, you know, the monies that we award per prospective hotel stay. It was a very high percentage. And they are in their infancy, and that is why we continue to support them. We think it's a great thing that they changed their event to a two-day event.
Thank you.
So the best thing they can do is continue with the surveys.
Okay. Thank you.
That's exactly what we said about that event last year. This is what, third or fourth year? We asked for heads on beds last year.
Exactly, but I think it's at least 3 years. I know.
Are you getting heads on beds for all of the projects? Because that's what this whole thing is supposed to be focused on.
Right. Right. And they, you know, I know it's difficult.
I'm not picking on them.
I know it's difficult to do the surveys. It's difficult to do the surveys. And a one-day event... There's some things that you don't see on this list because they got no funding. But if it's a, let's say it's a street festival in downtown Aiken, there were two of those that got no funding.
Right.
Zero. And I think that Juneteenth, because they're in the infancy and they changed it to a two-day, is the reason that they got the funding that they did.
Okay.
Which, on a per-person basis, was a high ratio.
Okay.
But we're all for it.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Did you have any... Whoa, Peggy. Excuse me. I'm sorry. I was just going to ask, did you have any one of these that the folks were really upset because...
Yes, we did. And I hope that some more money is going to come in.
Yeah.
I mean, we're basically working on an estimate, as I understand it. I know that the Battle of Aiken folks are very disappointed. Typically, let's say last year they got $25,000 and this year they only got $5,000. That's a big cut.
What did
I know
they do
they're
differently?
Unhappy about it. Excuse me?
What did they do differently?
They didn't do anything differently, but because we have a new program this year and we're really focusing on the overnight stays, many of the people in the Battle of Aiken that come to the Battle of Aiken camp. And they do a great job with surveys.
Mm-hmm.
But we just didn't... The other thing about the Battle of Aiken is it's an established event.
Yeah.
You know, unlike the Juneteenth.
Right.
Where they've got a track record. So what we are all hoping, all the members of my committee are hoping, is that more funding is going to come in. Now, I must say that the difficulty is, for instance, the Aiken Chamber of Commerce, in this particular instance, you know, some groups ask for $30,000 in the hopes that they get $10,000 or $15,000. The Chamber of Commerce is one of those who don't ask for more than they need, okay? I understand that. And they got $6,000 this year. Now, my fear is that the money may come in, but it may be too late for them.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just...
Mm-hmm.
So if you'll keep up Richard Pierce with the Department of Revenue, that would be great.
We are in constant comment with them and
right.
conversation. And, you know, we brought something to their attention, and I think they're penalizing all of us. But we have a conversation. So
very good.
And again, in the past, we have had additional funds that have shown up. There's no guarantee of that.
That's
and
right.
I know the committee's done a great job when additional funds have come available to distribute those.
We can have an emergency meeting and we come forth.
I think several years ago we got additional money and everybody got funded 100%.
That's right.
So if you get additional money, do you have to come back to us to... distribute it?
Well, we make our recommendations and then it goes to City Council.
Right.
Yeah, we can't do it without you guys.
Right. Council always
wants to do it without
you. Thank
you.
Thank you, Peggy.
Okay,
thank you.
We need a second to accept.
I second.
Okay. Any discussion? Anymore?
Any input from anybody?
Does anybody have? What were you pointing to, Dick?
I thought some people here were going to...
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
But if they're not, we're ready to vote.
Okay, show of hands, please, all in favor. Passes unanimously. Okay. Item 3, fire safety banners for Kennedy Colony Smoke Detector Project. Mr. Pierce.
Thank you very much, Mayor. You've got a memo from Public Safety Director Charles Barranco. We have been recognized by the State Fire Marshal's Office with quite an honor. They want to start a pilot project for making sure that folks have a working smoke detector in their homes. I don't know if council's aware of this. I wasn't aware of it until we had the meeting with the State Fire Marshal, but if you have a smoke detector in your home and it's more than 10 years old, it's no good to you. The sensor has a 10-year shelf life, so you need to be updating your smoke detector. With this focus in Kennedy Colony, with the State Fire Marshal's Office, we'll also be hanging information in the Gatewood community, if I'm not mistaken. Thank you, Captain Brazier, Chief Branko. They want to put banners out so folks understand that they can have completely free a smoke alarm installed in their home to make them fire safe. So, of course, some of these banners would be in the right-of-way, very temporary, but we're asking permission to put those banners up. It's a safety issue, and we think it's a very worthwhile project that promotes the safety of our citizens and nation. So we'd ask permission from council to do that.
Very good. Anybody here representing?
Chief Branko's here with Captain Brazier if there were any questions, but it's just a matter of putting the banners in the right
way. That's okay. No necessary to talk unless you had something you'd like to say.
They'd love to have permission to put
the banners. I didn't know if someone was here from the community.
I second.
One question on this, since we now have a motion and a second. Do we need to put a sunset date on this from the state? And the reason I said is there an end date from the state? I don't want one from council, but since it's a...
We're just going to put them up for the event, as I understood, on Saturday, March 15th. So it's just up for a day.
Is there a finish date for this from the state? They say they give you X dollars for 6 months or something.
They're giving us smoke detectors. We're going to put them in the house.
We'll be sitting there on Saturday.
Okay, I just wanted to be sure there wasn't a time limit from the state we needed to react to.
No, so we just wanted to do that on Saturday.
Thank you.
Okay, we've got a motion and a second. Any discussion? Not your hands, please, on favor. Passes unanimously. Okay. Petitions and requests.
Councilmember Everett asked for an update on George's Pond and Whiskey Road storm drainage, and Mr. Grinton is here. We've got some materials in the file. I don't know if that was sufficient for Mr. Everett, or if Mr. Grinton is here to answer questions.
Yes, it is sufficient, and my motive and reason for doing that, when this comes back to council, it's got to go to the state, and the state's got to approve this. Then, if you will, Mr. Grinton's got to come back to us and go through the motions to say, hey, we need to get an estimate for this and so forth and so on, because this thing is widespread. I think it's all the way from, Powder House? This actually affects properties down to Powder House, doesn't it, George? Or is it Banksman?
All the way down to Powder House.
Yeah. This affects a big area, and there's actually no drainage for this. It stops at Powder House, and it floods over. And I know that Mr. Grinton and Hassan Hillebrand, Mr. Tilden Hillebrand and Specific have been working on this. I just want to let you know, when this comes back to council, we're probably going to have neighbors from out in the county that's going to be showing up here. So I think George and Tillon have done a good job to try to answer their questions as they come up. And when it gets here, just be prepared for a discussion and some other interfaces with a number of county residents.
Will some of it be safety concerns or flooding concerns?
Flooding of yards.
Huh?
Flooding of yards.
Well, on what kind of a rain? A big rain? A little rain?
It's got to be a 100-year flood, doesn't it?
No.
There are 25.
Probably 10.
The property is flooded today. So what we don't want to do is worsen it with the detention pond.
You need to, when it comes here, I'm just preparing you. There's some things that we got to be sure that we don't accent, if you will.
that are way downstream by a couple of miles.
Don't make worse.
It's a stormwater issue. So that was my reason for putting it on here. And when it comes in, I'm sure we're going to have some help from citizens. So thank you for that.
We hook up the Lowe's and the George's Pond.
Yeah, it's Lowe's, George's Pond.
It does not have enough capacity to handle it. Then some, you know.
Wait till he comes by. That's why I'm putting it up now. You need to get it on your radar screen because we're talking several million dollars to fix the problem. So most of it's a capital project, but I'm preparing you ahead of time for considerable discussion on this and what we need to do to be sure we comply with the stormwater issues.
Very good. Very good.
Thank you.
Okay. The next item.
Yes, sir. Mr. Ebner had requested an update on infrastructure work in the Ridge Creek subdivision, and I've checked with our planning department director. As far as the plannings go, they're in compliance, the developer is, with the plannings that were required under the concept plan. As far as the infrastructure goes, we do have a list. I don't have a final list from George. We'll provide that to council this week of the infrastructure items that the developer needs to complete. We've got that letter of credit that comes due in June, so that letter was going out, if I'm not mistaken, later this week. It will certainly copy council. The other question we had is, council will recall we had about three different meetings on this and had the developer in the room. I think it was the northern boundary was supposed to have an equestrian trail. DHEC intervened on some stormwater runoff issues and large riprap was installed instead. And Mr. Everett and I talked about it. And then the question became whether there were other areas in the subdivision, particularly the areas adjoining Woodside, for a potential equestrian trail. And that's why on page 114 I included the concept plan that says the development will provide a 50 feet wide equestrian trail and vegetated buffer along the east, north, and west perimeters of the site to protect existing trees and where deemed necessary by the planning director to add trees and vegetation to the buffer area. Since there is an equestrian trail designation in the letter that we're sending to the developer, we're confirming whether there will be an equestrian trail along that western border, which I believe is the border with Woodside.
Well, it's a deeper issue than that. There was supposed to be one along the northern border, mm-hmm. and that got turned into a ditch. Mm-hmm. And when it did, even practically, you can't install the trail there because there's some hillsides that are in the way now, mm-hmm. and you'd have to take up people's yards. The addition, and I complimented, I can't remember the fellow's last name now, the developer.
Ron Monahan.
I've complimented Mr. Monahan. It was supposed to be an equestrian community. And with the economy and everything, he changed it to regular housing community without stalls and barns and so forth. And I think that was a good thing. But in that process, we wound up with a deep ditch for probably about 1,500 feet that's got big rocks in it, 12, 14, 18 inches in diameter. And I think we need to accommodate the citizens and say, is that okay with those citizens to have this ditch with the big rocks in it? That's one question. Talking to several of the neighbors, they don't have too big an issue with it. And I said, well, what if there's a young family with kids and he rolls down in this ditch, it's 12, 15 feet deep at the exit end of it. So I think that's one thing that's a community issue. And if they say that's okay, then I think the money that would have went in to fixing this, we need to look at the other areas for the equestrian trail as is designated in the concept plan. So I think it's a discussion item with the neighborhood, and maybe we hold it at their little pavilion or something, and go ahead and get the air cleared up from them. What do they want as owners? And I think all the lots but one are on the back up of that ditch are occupied now, and they seem to be happy with what they got. The detention pond needs a little bit of work, a couple of truckloads of dirt, and get some rocks out of the way so the buffer's clear there. But I think a tour out there with you and I and whoever from staff planning and engineering would be wise to refresh this and then have a little community meeting with the neighborhood out there. And there's probably 50 homes now, 40 to 50 homes, and I think there are enough people there that could say, yeah, that's okay. Now, we really don't like the big rocks for young kids. And that's where I am on that. And really, it's to close out the bond, which is about, what, $300,000, $350,000 coming up. And a big part of that bond was some other issues which were brought up by the staff, not me. So I'd like to organize a little visit out there again and go walk that little area and then determine from there what the path forward should be.
Very good.
And Mr. Mayor, that's I think the neighborhood getting involved here is important. So once we close it out, we don't want one or two of them coming back and saying, well, you did this or did that. And I think the council needs to act on it at some time to say everybody's agreed to it.
I think that's an excellent idea. Yeah. Okay, next. What's the next one?
Mr. DeWar had some more questions.
Yeah, Dick had.
Yes, I asked that we put an item on the... on the agenda having to do with a change to a budget process. The city manager in September 2013 gave us a memo outlining the budget process and when he does what and so forth. And although this letter is not applicable for this year, I still would like to make a permanent change to the budget process so that in the February time frame, before the departments submit their budgets to the city manager, that we have a one-on-one with department heads and be afforded the opportunity to discuss issues with them, as we have done in the past. But I think it's important that it be done earlier so that we can influence some of the budget items that would come to our attention. It's too late to do it this year because I'm asking that we do it in February, but I would like to move that we change the budget process to permit a meeting in February with the department heads prior to their submitting of a budget to the city manager.
I'd like to comment.
Can we discuss this?
Yeah, well, absolutely. That was just a motion, so it...
Yeah,
you need to second, but yes, we can discuss it.
Well, if it needs a second, I'll second it.
I'll second it. Okay.
And I would just point out, I mean, I think it's for discussion purposes. I'm not sure you could actually pass anything that would change your rules tonight. That would need to be done by an ordinance. But if council has a discussion, they want us to.
I was not aware that his memo was in the was where.
Well, I mean, I'm sorry. Say it again.
I'm changing something that was in a memo that he gave to us. Is that?
I don't think you can do that by a resolution.
I made a motion to do it.
But you're asking the city to change its process on how it passes a budget. I think that would have to be done by an ordinance. If council desires to go forward.
I don't think that's
it.
What I'm asking, but I...
I'd like to be heard.
Sure.
Okay, sir.
This would represent a major adjustment to the budget process, and I think we've talked about some adjustments this year that what I've heard is council's desire. One would be looking at the utilities budget completely separately and assessing the revenue. Quite frankly, we take the month of February when we don't have ice storms and assess our revenues and revenue projections for the following budget year based on our collections to date through a half year. Again, we want to make sure we make best use of everybody's time. If council's ready to do another zero-based budgeting, we can certainly schedule that and accommodate that. Frankly, February is very early in the process. We really need to know what our revenues are going to be before we can plan expenditures. And that's, you know, worked very well for us in the past. The budgets that we've presented to you and the adjustments that we've done in August, we've had modest budget underruns and have, you know, designated that money for appropriate places. What I'm proposing and what Mr. DeWar and I discussed would be a series of workshops in April, which would be prior to the first reading of the budget in May. And rather than just have a budget work session, what we would have would be workshops with the four largest budgets that you review at any given year, which would be public safety, engineering and utilities, public services, and parks, recreation, and tourism. And based on council's availability, we've identified some dates in April that would work as far as a preliminary presentation by the department directors. And what we try to do was a meeting a week so we don't get too tired, you know, with the budgets and meet ourselves to death. We're looking at Thursday, April 3rd, Tuesday, April 8th. Now, that is Master's Week for everybody's information. Thursday, April 17, Thursday, April 24, and that would be a good opportunity based on our revenue review, and then it gives ample time for the department director to look through and for discussion with them about the priorities they see in their budget depending on the revenue forecast. You know, in a council manager form of government, the ordinance that you have in place that Mr. Smith is talking about is that the city manager would present you a budget. In past years, we've used the Horizons meeting to establish goals, determine revenues, and then with the goals that council has adopted, we identify our spending priorities. Again, with an opportunity to have specifically focused workshops on different departments' budgets, there's still plenty of time to make any adjustments if council has concerns about the priorities that staff would be recommending before we would come to a first reading in May, which would be May 12th. That's about in the middle of the month. And then you would not take up the budget again if council votes not to meet on Memorial Day until June 9, which gives you almost a month between the first and second readings of the budget. So, you know, staff's perspective would be that this provides ample opportunity not only for staff to get ready for council questions, but for council to then look at the draft budget that we are considering submitting, and then discussing details in workshops so that you can have first reading with a month between first and second reading to give you ample time to look at the budget priorities that were discussed and then the budget that was submitted.
Mr. Mayor, I'd be perfectly willing to withdraw my motion and give this a shot. I think it's an opportunity for us to meet with the department heads, which is the primary focus. While I would like to have done it earlier so that we could influence what they might be asking for, I'm willing to do this, and I certainly am willing to take the city manager up on an offer to do zero-based budgeting again, but I would suggest that we do it one department at a time on a quarterly basis or something. We can talk about that later, but I'd be perfectly willing to withdraw my motion and give this a shot.
Okay.
I think what's important, and we just went through a discussion on the water and sewer rates, and there was obviously a lot of interest there because that's a direct effect, if you will, to all 30,000 people. All of this other is also direct. But I think there some discussions from each of the director to say, you know, these are my top 10. You may have 100 projects in PRT, but these are the ones that we're going to promote out there, and these ones we're going to do. And if we run out of money, project number 53 doesn't get done, type thing. And I think that is probably something that we put out as part of the city manager's write-up of when we approve the budget. You can say, we review these departments, and these are our top 10 or 15 jobs, because I can sure that through the committees and PRT and these others, they all have their little projects that they want to do.
They certainly do.
And I think this would mirror what we just did on the water and sewer rates.
Right.
And this way, when people come in now with water and sewer and said, look, here's all the data that we did, and this is what we're going to do. And by the way, if your project happened to be George's number 23, you may not get it done.
Right.
But it gives me ammunition personally to rebut people that said, well, you didn't do this.
That's a good point.
Mm-hmm. That's what I'm looking at.
Oh, yeah. And I mean,
I
again.
I think Mr. DeWar's in the same mode.
Oh, that's great.
Absolutely.
And consistently, what I've tried to share with council is anything that helps you in those conversations with the citizens, that's why we, you know, produce reams and reams of documents and copies and tables and charts. Anything that helps you, that's why we're here.
Yeah. And let's try it and see. But if we put it out, and because the memo is, I think, one thing, I don't know, together, you know, we put out what contracts are awarded and that other information.
We are.
That information, it gets distribution, and you'd be surprised how many contractors look at that.
Good.
And I think that's been a help to say, well, sure, I should have been on that bidders list, and I don't get the comments from them anymore. Well, I didn't know what was going on.
So does this need to be drafted as an ordinance and brought back at the next?
This doesn't, no.
If we
do these dates.
I'm only asking that because of what Gary said.
Ms. Sarah put it on the record, so you got me.
Okay, well, I didn't mean it that way. I just was going off of what Gary said. Now, we're talking about starting this in 15 or 14?
Oh, this year.
No, I was going to do it this year.
Okay.
Next month.
Yeah.
And this would be a public meeting, but if all the council members don't show up, we'd sit there and discuss it anyway. It's not a, you know, it'd be a public meeting, but who shows up,
Yeah.
And again, I've got staff.
It's master's tickets.
Well,
that's right.
Then you need to.
I have staff with family members too. Is there any problem with council? We just start these at 4 p.m.?
Fine by me.
That's better.
You got two workers, but yeah.
You say 4?
4 p.m.
Yeah.
And we'll meet in 2 of them.
Did you pick one of those dates or you just.
We're going to use all 4 dates because each day will be a different department.
Do we do it April 1st instead of 3rd?
You want to meet on April Fool's Day?
Sure. I mean, I'm just not here the 3rd, that's all. I just would like to attend them all.
Again, if that works for council.
What day is that?
That's a Tuesday.
I'm not available on the 3rd either. I'll have my grandbaby.
Okay, well, Tuesday the 1st then?
Yeah.
Okay. Great.
And the other ones are stay or what?
No,
sir. No, that would be in addition to.
Yeah.
We have the 1st, the 8th, the 17th, and the 24th. And I'll certainly email that out so you have it.
Okay.
Good show.
And then I guess technically, since I withdrew my motion, somebody's got to withdraw their second?
I'll withdraw my second.
Okay.
Whoever you got down as a second.
He did. He had seconds, thirds, almost a fourth.
Yeah.
Well, it reflects the importance we put on the budget.
Absolutely. The most important work we do.
Okay.
Well, I think that little work session we had today probably shows that, you know, we need a little bit more drilling down into the budgets and what can be done and about additional departments.
Absolutely.
That's good.
Glad to do it.
Yeah.
The next item I have, I received a call from a City of Aiken employee, I won't identify, expressing concern because the employee felt that there was an implicit promise of overtime pay for them working the 3 days of the storm when the city offices were closed. I subsequently received a copy of an email, which I think is on everybody's desk, which, as I read, sort of reflected that weather event work, 150%, use if you work during the weather event in combination with RG. So I did discuss this at length with the city manager earlier today. You know, these folks did a heck of a job for us.
Absolutely.
And they, I would assume that they came from Public Works, Public Services, and Park and Rec.
They did.
I know I saw Park and Rec people in my neighborhood.
Yes.
And my sense is if we promise them overtime, then we should pay them overtime. And if that's an administrative challenge, then we need to make them whole.
Well, and again, as you and I discussed, Mr. DeWar, the email that went out on February 17 was a coding issue. We needed to keep up with folks' work during the storm. We had coded the prior snowstorm with the this EW 150%, because we pay comp time. We actually awarded comp time to the workers during that time. I've had an opportunity to talk with representatives from North Augusta and the county of Aiken, and they would normally not give premium pay. However, to the extent that folks worked, and it depends on the type worker, there's the regular worker, there's a law enforcement worker, and there's a firefighter. And all that is treated differently under the FLSA. And that's why I provided a follow-up email that Ms. Abney sent out on February 26th. And it's very clear about that, that when we issued the payroll check, that to the extent folks worked the required hours under FLSA for an award of overtime, we paid overtime. And to date, we've paid out over $34,000 in total for a total of 132 employees who did work overtime. There is no question, because these gentlemen in the room that I introduced you to earlier have done a heck of a good job, and I've had the opportunity to look them in the eye and shake their hand and tell them that. And I think several council members attended the barbecue lunch we had a couple of weeks ago. The situation we're in now, having paid the overtime, if we go back and try and pay some sort of premium pay, it creates a logistics nightmare, because to the extent that you put premium pay on those regular hours they work, then we have to go through and do a recalculation on the overtime hours, and it's a manual calculation of this blended rate. What would be a lot cleaner and a better opportunity for us is, to the extent these folks have worked so hard and our budget permits, and we will look at this very carefully to make sure that we can make this happen, is for council to consider the award of a bonus through a supplemental appropriation or designation of funds in the budget. So we would identify funds to pay these workers, and we know it's 132 of our over 400 that work for us, to make sure that we properly recognize them for a hard work above and beyond the call. So that would be staff's recommendation, and we could certainly look at this and see if we can identify funds sufficient to pay them a bonus that would be appropriate based on the hard work that they have done and continue to do for us. It's an amazing job, and I've shared with the group, I've had many compliments from our citizens about the hard work that you guys are out there doing every day. With a smile on your face, I hasten to add.
Got a quick question. How does this get calculated into if there's an emergency declared as far as our reverse compensation? How do we? How do you account for comp time? Figure comp time at the regular salary rate?
Well, what we do with comp time is we award that based on the event that was worked. That was just something we did as a goodwill gesture. With the FEMA advance team that we sat down and talked with, they will only reimburse overtime. So when FEMA looks at our pay schedule, they're going to look at FLSA. That's all they want to look at. They're not going to pay for regular time, but they will pay for overtime. Now, we are looking at a new pilot program, and depending on our response in the first 72 hours, the first 30 days, the first 90 days, the first 120 days, we'll have a presentation to council on this when the time comes. But if council desires for us to participate in this pilot program, there may be funds available in addition to the overtime money. But that's something that FEMA determines. We just submit the documentation. Typically, they only pay for overtime. So premium pay or something, they're not going to be interested in reimbursing.
So bonus in addition to the money from the pilot program. Is that what you're saying?
No, what I'm saying is we have paid overtime, and we're going to identify another source of funds to pay a bonus for discussion with council in an amount that council would determine.
How would the bonus make people whole? Because you're talking, I assume, you said 132 employees, and I would assume you've got a wide spectrum of wages. So
we do.
I mean, obviously, let's say somebody who makes $10 an hour, we're talking about $5 an hour for the hours that they worked, versus somebody who makes $25 an hour, and you're talking $12.50 an hour. So would the bonus be tailored to that level?
And again, Mr. Dewar, that's what we would be looking at. And again, we would want to do something that would be fair given the hard work that's been done.
Okay.
As far as discussing the details with you, I'm not prepared to do that now. But well, we would certainly look at all that.
Okay, but I think, well, I think we all agree that the folks have done a good job.
Yes.
And quite frankly, if they were led to believe that they were going to be on premium pay, whether that was right or not, but if they were led to believe, and I, you know, we're talking premium and overtime, I'm talking time and a half.
Right.
If they were led to believe that they were going to get that, if they worked the 3 days during the storm, and to me, that's an obligation that we have to pay that or the equivalent. I'm sure they'll all be happy to get the check as long as it represents what they didn't get as they feel they were promised.
And we'll look at that, Mr. Dewar, again. No other entity that we've talked to does that. By nature of the jobs that folks have, they're subject to call out. And, you know, we pay for the hours worked, and when the hours worked exceed a certain amount in a certain time period, in compliance with the Fair Labor Standards Act, we pay overtime, and we've done that in this case. That all being said, I'm very much in favor of coming to council with a presentation for a bonus for these hard workers. I think they've earned it, and we just have to identify a source of funds to pay it.
And you're talking about a bonus just for those 132?
Yes, sir.
Yes, and when would that happen? When would you plan on coming back to council?
We'll be discussing it at the department directors tomorrow, and I can give council a timeline.
Okay, I'm the only one talking. I don't know how the rest of council feels, but you know, there's a. I mean, these folks worked, and others got paid the same amount as the people that worked.
And, well, not for 132 of our workers. We paid them overtime.
Only the FSLA overtime.
Yes, sir, which is what everybody else is doing.
Well, I understand, but I'm not sure everybody else promised them time and a half if they came out to work during the storm, as this memo seems to imply.
Well, it seems to be that's the key thing right now. How valid is that what you got, and were they promised?
Well, and we could look at the legality of it, Mayor. I'm just trying to approach this from a fairness standard. These folks were out in very adverse conditions and worked very hard. And
I'm not saying not do it. I'm just, I'm not saying that either. You brought this up mainly because of one request or something, Dick?
I had a complaint from an employee, yes.
All I'm saying is that a go out to 132? Did the others get a promise, or was this a wholesale promise?
No, sir. We were just talking in the emails about how to code the timesheets.
Yeah.
And in particular, since this was a weather event, there was an adverse weather event that was going to potentially be reimbursable by FEMA. That's why we're identifying the timesheets with ICE. That's in the email that I gave you a copy of.
If we got, do we have any promises from FEMA yet?
No, sir. No, not at all. We've had a preliminary meeting with FEMA representatives. They gave a cursory review of the documents that we were putting together and had some good suggestions for us about how to account and document our expenses related to the storm, and that's what we're doing. Until the president makes a formal declaration, right. FEMA will not assign a caseworker.
Yeah.
We anticipate that declaration and then an assignment of the caseworker so we can have a better detailed discussion with them.
Very good.
And I would point out that this memo came out well after the paychecks that caused a lot of dissension were released. When do our employees get paid? On Friday? Every other Friday, just like we do?
Yeah. Your pay schedule is the same. Like we're turning in, we're going to get paid this Friday. For example. But again, we want to treat our employees fairly. Folks have done a good, hard job. I've told them that personally, and we are going to follow up with a recommendation for an appropriate bonus.
Good. Okay. Good.
All right. Well, I hope that we can see that soon because, and we did, by the way, talk, and I think you agreed that we weren't going to be asking them to take comp time when they're doing this work for the debris pickup and the storm and so forth. Did we not agree on that?
We're not, no, we're not doing comp time. We're paying overtime.
Yes. Okay.
Yes, sir, I've said that several times.
But this,
paid overtime.
But this memo talks about during the first snowstorm, apparently comp time was used for reimbursement, so.
That's what I said in my initial remarks.
But
that's
I know we discussed it at council that we won't be doing the comp time for the debris removal issue.
No, sir, we are paying overtime.
So these guys can also look for, look to get a bonus later?
That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is we're going to develop a bonus to come to council for approval because that'll be a supplemental budget expenditure, which you'll have to pass by an ordinance.
And I would hope that was maybe the next meeting.
Can I do the best I can, Mr. DeWar?
Yes, ma'am.
I've got a lot on my plate.
I understand, but this is a very...
It's very important.
That's what paychecks
we want to make
and,
sure... It's very important. We want to make sure what's paid is fairly paid.
Yes.
Bonus and reimbursement?
No. The bonus is not FEMA reimbursable. The only thing FEMA has said so far they'll pay is overtime. Now, again, there is a pilot project, like I just mentioned, and possibly we, depending on the immediate 72-hour response, we may get more than just overtime. We have to get detail on that.
And I, if I could just, my last thing is, second last thing, I just want to continue the discussion on the debris pickup. How many trucks do we have and how many people do we have solely dedicated to this?
Mr. Coakley's here. He'll be glad to give you a full briefing on that.
I know he's the man with the answers.
While he's coming forward, can, just want to ask a quick question, and I know this is not within your control, but my understanding is that the state of Georgia's already gotten presidential approval of federal disaster aid.
They
do you have any idea why South Carolina is lagging?
The governor just made her request a week ago.
And you know where
how are you?
And you know we're his favorite state, right, Phil?
Yeah, I know. I'm sure we are.
Council would love to hear about what you do with debris pickup, Tim.
How many trucks do we have and how many people?
Well, that number changes every day. Like today we had five call in sick. One guy's father passed away. Another guy had oral surgery on Friday, hadn't recovered yet. Three called in, you know, some type of stomach flu. So the number changes every day.
Sure.
Equipment goes up and down. Ideally, we've got six of the grapple arm trucks that load. And then we've also got two 18-wheelers with big construction dump beds, two roll-off trucks, you know, with a big, like, construction container, but you can open the back door and kind of use it like a dump truck. We've got a tandem axle dump truck. We've got three of our old sleigh car, what we call, you know, where they pull the truck, a shuttle truck. And the way we've configured things is we found that the best configuration is for two of those loaders to work together with a bunch of these shuttle trucks. If we spread them out too far, sometimes the trucks will be delayed away dumping and the loader won't have anything to do. So we keep two of them together. It's a little easier for us to manage. So today we had two in Gem Lakes, two in Hounds Lake, one in Crosland Park, and then we had one that was just totally dedicated to those safety issues that you were talking about. We got with Captain Brazier, had him go out and look at some things to make sure we could get fire trucks through. You know, we're not the experts. We're good at picking up stuff, but you know what he needed to get a fire truck through there, you know, we value his opinion. So he triaged some stuff. Some warranted immediate pickup, some didn't. So I've got one crew just dedicated to that safety stuff.
Now, if you had all your people show up for work tomorrow, how many would they be?
Well, I've never really counted them. I've got so many helping from other departments.
Oh, do you? Okay.
You know, we've got a lot of George Renton staff in helping us. They've got all the backhoes. It seems that we take those two loaders and sit them still and kind of push to them. It saves us on mobilization time, picking up and moving and setting back down.
Do we have anybody from Greenwood or Lexington or Greenville still here?
Greenville's got 14 people here. They've got two loading vehicles and then 12 shovel trucks, dump trucks and stuff. So they're making a heck of a dent. They're actually in Woodside Plantation at this time.
And then I noticed Friday, because I monitor the Facebook and Twitter, believe it or not, and I mentioned this to the city manager earlier, that we were doing Richland. And to my way of thinking, that's a state street. and I was asking the question, and maybe the city manager wants to answer it instead. But
well, yeah, that's not really Tim's purview.
I understand.
Tim would love to pick up all the city, of course, with FEMA reimbursement. And the concerns that you and I discussed, Mr. DeWar, are concerns that Tim and I have discussed and other staff and I have discussed. You know, we've got some beautiful plants. We've got an irrigation system. We've got a lot of considerations in the city. And, frankly, the county and DOT have both hired their own contractor who has then, in turn, hired a series of subcontractors. And we've had issues with them, frankly, where they're certain contract workers are being paid by the weight, not by the volume. So they're cherry-picking piles and picking all the big stuff out and leaving little stuff behind. So we still have a mess. We're trying to get this first cut through and pick up a majority of the mess. And I'll just brag on the workers that are here in this room. They just do a far better job than the contractors do, frankly.
No question about the quality of our workers. And I guess my comment would be, why don't we go back to DOT and deal with them with their problems? I mean, our guys should be doing our streets and not the...
Well, the majority of the streets are in the street right away. And as you and I discussed when we talked on the phone about this issue, frankly, the city's on the hook for the condition of those parks. Even though they're, you know, SCDOT right away, we've got an agreement with them for maintaining those parkways that goes back decades. And it's just something we've always done and we've budgeted for. And again, the citizens have come to expect those parkways to look in a certain condition, and we think we do better in-house than the contractors do. Those folks are up from out of state and have other contractors from different states, and they're just here to move stuff and go on to the next
storm. But that's a decision that's going to take us till May to get the first pass done.
It's going to take us, we think, at least a couple more months. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Now, is the state, so in other words, for all of the state streets, and there's a bunch of them besides parkways.
A bunch.
Do we get reimbursement from that to the state?
That's, again, something, no, not from the state, from FEMA. What we pick up in the debris is city of Aiken right-of-way. We've had that researched by our legal team, and since we're on the hook, we showed FEMA those materials, and they said if you have a legal responsibility for that debris, we'll reimburse for its removal. We did it entirely in 2004, and they reimbursed us entirely for it. So even with the changes that FEMA has put in place with the disasters that have happened over the last 10 years and with this pilot program, our legal team is comfortable that we're on the hook for the removal of that debris as a hazard to our citizens.
Has DOT offered to do any work in the city?
DOT has talked with us. I put the mutual aid agreement in last time's agenda packet. And the legal team looked at it, has a lot of problems with the wording that's contained in it. We submitted some proposed revisions to that wording, and I haven't heard back from DOT yet.
Our legal team had concerns with it?
Yes, sir. They sure did.
And it's in the DOT's ballpark now to resolve those?
Yes, sir. They've got it.
On a related but different question, I've had folks in my own neighborhood ask me this. Regular yard debris that is bagged up or something like that, or just leaves and things, you know, that's not being picked up because y'all are busy. But can they take bagged debris, or can they take stuff to the other dump location for the storm debris locations? Can they take that if they have bagged leaves? And
sure, any resident in the city of Aiken can take any of their debris to the resident pile,
yeah,
which is out of the...
Do you want it in plastic bags, though?
Yeah, we prefer it not. We've really kind of segregated it. I mean, when they go to dump it, they'll see
the
their...
The problem is, once you start trying to move it, if it's a bunch of leaves and stuff, once you go trying to move it, if it's not in the bag, it's going to blow out of the back of your truck or something.
I'm not sure you heard Tim's last sentence.
I'm sorry. Well, there's a separate pile for the black bags.
Okay.
We're trying to keep that stuff separate.
Okay.
We don't know what the end use of this product is going to be.
Yeah,
and
it's
black
really,
bags may interfere with that.
Yeah, black bags are a plague to us. So it's better if they could just put a tarp over it, then dump it down.
Okay. Well, in the black bags you see at the street, we're actually coming back with our garbage crews and picking those up on Fridays and Saturdays. You know, you may notice or have some questions from your constituents that they picked up all the limbs, but they left the three black bags. We're coming.
So, yeah, in our neighborhood, this is not probably the time or place to get this specific, but our neighborhood was told a couple of years ago that because of the overhanging oaks and power lines and everything else that the gravel truck had trouble in our neighborhood, and they prefer us to put things in the black bags because it's easier for them to pick up by hand or something. So our neighborhood does a lot of that.
Under normal operations, that's fine because we're going to put it in the landfill.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're going to break some of those black bags, but it will keep the fines a little bit cleaner for you. And we've got supervisors that will come out and help you find a location that doesn't interfere with tree limbs and
you
power lines.
And somebody else's yard or something. But
yeah.
We'll talk about it later. It's not the right time.
Yeah, well, there's a solution to everything.
Mark had another item he wanted to consider.
Well, one last item on this. I would appreciate perhaps if you could continue sending us emails or city manager send us emails and keep us up on the status. I don't know about the rest of the council. I'm not inundated. I probably get two or three calls a day wondering when they're going to come to my neighborhood and what have you. And, you know, sometimes people throw the safety issue at it, and as they did in the Troon area. I don't be interested in getting a comment from the chief on whether that was a bona fide safety issue. But
well, please send those to the city manager as soon as you get them.
Yes, understand.
You know, that's the most important thing we're doing out there is keeping it safe.
Understand.
Well, I got a few calls from residents on the north side that heard that they were doing Woodside first, and they were wondering why they saving the north
true,
side to the left.
Just not true.
This is the phone calls I'm getting.
Well, we started out with one loader in each council district,
right,
kind of spreading things around, but we really learned the efficiency was when we got those two paired up together.
Yeah.
But we had all six loaders work Hampton Avenue, you know, prior to an event on the north side.
Yeah. Right, I remember
great,
that.
Yeah.
You know, we've got one I know working in Carlson Park right at the moment.
I didn't say it was true. I said that's the calls I'm getting. I see them in the grocery store, and they said, well, they ain't been to my neighborhood.
I've gotten a message.
I heard they're cleaning up Southside first.
Do you have an email version of the map?
I don't think they actually did the
Southside. Do you have an email version of the map?
Yeah, we'll send that out.
That's what they
do. Okay, thank you.
Doing stuff.
Thanks, Tim. You guys are doing a great job.
Yeah, you are. Thank you.
The last item I had, Mr. Mayor, I'm going to withdraw. It was a request for a council member-only executive session to discuss a contract matter regarding employee survey, and I would prefer doing that with the full council. So I would ask the city manager to put that on the agenda for the next meeting.
Okay.
And do you need a memo, or is that good enough, Richard?
I'm writing it down.
It would help me just from evaluating whether it's an appropriate action for an executive session if I understood what you were asking about.
I'll call you.
Okay. That'd be great.
All right, page 145 a minute. Miss Ryder has it on the screen, and we talked about this at the last meeting, and Mr. Pierce provided that. It says resignations. Does that include the dismissed and the retirements, that everybody would get a exit interview?
Now, the retirees would be a resignation, so we would do an exit interview.
How about dismissed?
That would not be considered a resignation. That would be considered a dismissal. We were not planning on doing an exit interview in a dismissal circumstance.
You wouldn't?
We never have.
Well, maybe that's why we recommended a program.
So we don't do any dismissals.
We don't do an exit interview in the dismissal. We discuss the reason for the dismissal with the employee. And on occasion, we've had employees who have written, you know, something in response to the personal action request.
Well,
but that's all discussed in the disciplinary matter that is the termination.
Okay. So the HR person doesn't see that person leaving, because there's two times.
Certainly does.
And there's two times that are most important in a hiring or an employee's career. One is when you hire them, you interview them, and one is when they leave, whether he's dismissed or not. So
the HR director does participate in the dismissal.
But
so she is involved.
It's involved, but it's not a private exit interview.
Not currently. Not a dismissal, no.
Okay. Is that a municipal policy or a city policy? How did that come
about? That's been a city policy for as long as I've worked here, which is over 15 years. And, again, I can get some more. Again, if I know the questions you have, I can have better answers for you. I'll be discussing that with our HR director.
I'll send you an email follow-up on that.
I don't have to send an email. I'll discuss it with the HR department director and I can get a better handle on how many she's had just one-on-one discussions after a dismissal.
With dismissals?
Yes.
Okay. So why you revise this other to where the HR person can request somebody to be there, I think is fine, you know, if there's something, but if it's retirement or whatever, should be okay. All right.
Okay. We're ready. Finished. Return.
We sure did. It's one at a time. One issue at a time.
He was stern, though. I got to tell you, Larry. He was pretty stern.
He was?
He's pretty stern. He's like, Pierce, get to work.
What the heck?
You're leaving your auction.
Yes, sir.
I appreciate that.